And
call the meeting to order.
What city you're getting.
And then it's like 116.
Okay, hello.
That's what it is.
Excuse me, we'll call the meeting to order. Sorry. Want to stand for the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, so do we have a motion to, did everybody get a chance to look at the minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, do we have a motion to move the minutes?
So moved.
Second. Brian? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Joe, we're voting on the minutes.
Okay.
Okay, so we are going to maybe take things out of order a little bit because Ken is here. And so we're going to do resolution number 279 first, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 19 of 2018, a local law amending local law 4 of 2015. A local law regarding regulating the use of polystyrene foam disposable food service ware by food service establishments in Ulster County to amend penalties and provide certain exemptions to be held on Thursday, September 20th, 2018. Just, would someone like to move it?
I'll move.
Second? Okay. Discussion.
Can you enjoy the second?
Sorry, who seconded?
Brian.
Brian.
Yeah, there's three separate things in this. I'm not tied to all, they're all not all tied together, so if the committee wanted to look at them separately, if there was one that they absolutely didn't want, if there was one that they might be open to, or that you might be open to, I'm open to the discussion. I'll just take them, you know, as they come in the resolution. The first one is the unique branding exemption. There is a unique packaging exemption built into the law, but the unique packaging exemption, I think, when it was written, was vague. I don't know if it was vague for a reason, but several facilities put in a request for a unique packaging exemption, and they were all denied by the health department. I don't know what their reasoning was. I also don't know if under the current definition of a unique packaging exemption, if they would find one to be acceptable or not, or if they just don't, you know, if they, it's all up to the commissioner and the commissioner can just deny them. A lot of information or a lot of focus has been spent on one particular food service establishment, but this coming from me is not about one particular establishment. It's about any establishment which could need to utilize branding and not have a branded alternative. I know that the point has also been made that that facility, which is Kentucky Fried Chicken, you know, has alternatives. I'm told that there's a cap on it. You know, there's a cap now. There wasn't originally when I was first talking about this. But my point isn't about, you know, getting KFC an exemption, because if they can't prove that there's no branded alternative, then they don't get the exemption. It actually makes it more specific that you need to be able to prove that there's no branded alternative. And if there's no company in the county right now that has no branded alternative and they need to utilize branding in their marketing, then nobody receives the exemption. But I think it should be an option if you need to use branding and if the branding is only available on Styrofoam.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Joe.
Do you have, you mentioned there were people turned down. Do you have examples of what they were turned down for or what they were, why they were stating?
The only one that I know about was the Kentucky Fried Chicken.
But you said it's not about Kentucky Fried Chicken.
I'm not. But so I'm saying they're the ones that came to me and I inquired about the health department. I think that I want to say Locks of Bagels and Saugerties is one of the ones that was turned down for unique packaging exemption. I don't have a comprehensive list with me.
Sure. Okay, but if we're going to, you're saying it's too vague, but I'm wondering, what did the vagueness cost anybody? If it's too vague, then who was turned down that maybe shouldn't have been? Or what are we talking about? Do we have any real examples of people that should have been?
Well, I mean, I can show you when the unique packaging exemption was turned down. I can show you what KFC was using and what they were using previously.
KFC is kind of a non-starter for me. We have Kentucky Fried Chickens all over the country that are not having issue with this. In fact, we're hearing kind of the opposite from a lot of these owners. This is one particular owner that may have. I'm not gonna try to speculate why that there's one. We have one owner here, and we're not hearing from other areas around the state and the country. We're hearing the opposite from those owners, so I'm not going to speculate. But I can say that that one doesn't interest me much, considering that, well, these are the Kentucky Fried Chickens, and just using my own brain, I can't think of why Kentucky Fried Chicken, one here in Ulster County, or a couple that she owns, if she owns more than one, why they need this to brand. What I'm asking is, if you're saying that's not the reason you're looking for an exemption, and there are a couple of companies that were turned down, do you have anything tangible that they should have been the exemption? Otherwise, what are we talking about? You're saying it's too vague, but if it's too vague, then there should be a result of that vagueness, and I'm asking for a result.
I guess one of my questions to the health department, and they're not here to ask the question right now, but one of my questions to the health department would be, is there a circumstance under which they would, they would give a unique packaging exemption? Because there was a unique packaging exemption built into the law.
Sure.
You know, if they're not going to give it under any circumstances, then why even have it in the law? That's one of my points.
I might say that maybe we don't have an example of one, and we're waiting for an example of one, and that's what I'm hoping you can give us. If we're rehashing this law that I've heard very few people besides one owner of one Kentucky Fried Chicken or two in our county complaining about, other than that, do we have a problem here, or are we, finding a solution in search of a problem, as
Laura.
Somebody I know.
Ken Cornell brought it up at another meeting that it was also some of the camps.
But we're talking about one part of this.
So I'm just struggling to find out what our issue is with the unique packaging, because I've yet to see an example of a unique package that didn't get approved that should have. And unless I see one, why are we even talking about this?
But again, if I could just respond to that, your opinion of what should qualify for unique packaging exemption might be different than mine, which might be different than Carol Ann Smith's.
I'm still looking for an example of one for us to argue about, is my point.
Well,
because
we have one, and you didn't find. I find the original Kentucky Fried Chicken example as a reasonable example, and you don't. And that's
you
kind of
said I took that the wrong way. I thought a minute ago you kind of said that this isn't necessarily what this is about.
It's not what it's about. But I'm saying you asked for an example. That's the example. But I'm saying that much has been made about me making this an issue just because of Kentucky Fried Chicken. It's not.
Ken, did anybody apply for it? They got it.
No.
Tracy.
And that's my point.
Yeah. So when I first heard about this in relation to Kentucky Fried Chicken, I did call Kentucky Fried Chickens in other parts of the state in Albany. Yeah. And obviously Kentucky Fried Chicken exists in other markets where the law exists. The Albany vendors all told me that, they have alternatives. We didn't speak about whether it was branded or not. They just said that they were complying with the law, and they.
Right.
I'm sure it comes from corporate that they were given whatever packaging to use.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I mean, I think Joe, you kind of hit the nail on the head in terms of the intention initially. That when Mary and I went through this, and in the examples that had unique packaging exemptions. That we were looking at in crafting the law. A lot of what was discussed were the things that we couldn't foresee. Something I remember hearing about, if there were some special kind of mushroom that was an odd shape that couldn't be damaged, and it's the unknown. It's the thing. It's not, I don't want to use this cup because this cup has an M on it, and I can't get an M without styrofoam. So the branding part, but I mean, it's. Yeah, it's. I'd like to see the examples that were turned down, or have a better understanding of what exactly. It seems like you're in search of the problem, but I'd like to see what the examples are so that I could see.
To me, it's not in search of an example.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's right now. it's completely 100% up to the Commissioner of Health. One person can make the decision on what's unique packaging and what's not. You know, I think that if we write the law a little bit more specifically, one thing that I see is unique packaging, unique branding. Other people might see something different. I'm open to whatever, but I think that we should write it more specifically in order to not leave it up to one person's discretion, which might be different than every person sitting at this table.
Yeah, I guess if I could just respond to that, I want to understand, it's the issue of creating branding as a part of the packaging, because I see the potential for creating a very big loophole in the law, because you say if a chain food service or a food service establishment uses specific branding, I mean, it's like, I could say, well,
I'll
this...
I'll be right back in 1 second, just okay. keep hold that thought.
Okay. Yeah, this is kind of... I feel like it's a problem in search of a...
Yeah. Just, you're saying that you called other...
Kentucky Fried Chickens in Albany, yeah.
And they...
They said they were complying with the law and they used no styrofoam.
And the idea that, look, this was so much about the leachability into food. The fact that the two big things that people have brought up is couple of summer camps keep putting their food in it, and Kentucky Fried Chicken here in Ulster County has somebody that's against it. If anything, this conversation has moved me to anything, pulling that language out and just having it, look, if you want a reason to put something in styrofoam at this point, then we're going to have to amend it specifically for you. Other than that, it's just a no. I don't like the idea of somebody having that kind of discretion either, but I think we should go the other way with it, if anything. But I have yet to see something that didn't get a waiver that should have, and if that's the case, then the law is working, and that language is working, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But what
right, in
you
your opinion?
Get?
But not, I mean, this is yeah. This is what is provided by Yum Brands for pretty much the rest of the country, except for those jurisdictions which have styrofoam bans, mm-hmm. and this is what is provided when they do not. There wasn't in the beginning. There is now a red lid with KFC written on.
What
so
goes
as far
in
as
that,
I,
just out of curiosity, do you know?
Mashed potatoes.
A hot food.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry,
Kathy. Recyclable.
Yeah. So,
one doesn't leach as much.
I think that the impulse to want to try to allow businesses to operate as they had previously and not injure them in any respect is important. I think we don't want to injure businesses. But there are... health and safety issues that are at play here. And so I'm really reluctant, as Legislator Maloney has said, to try to build into the law more room for exemptions. This amendment might make more sense if we had a longer experience. My understanding from the deputy executive, Ken Crennel, is that there are one or two. There may be one other one on the unique packaging, and there's one nonprofit. I think that if that's the that we want a law that has very few people that are having trouble with it, and that's what it seems like we have. And I do think that the call for, well, if it's really problematic for more people. But this, going to the health department allows a health department official to look at it and say, what type of food are you putting in that, and how important is it for it to be branded versus for it to be safe? Hot food is what it most leaches carcinogens into the food from that product. And so I think it's incumbent upon the business to find an alternative that doesn't put carcinogens into its food.
Fair enough. I'm willing to take it out. I mean, it's a concern that I've had about businesses here in Ulster County, but it's not shared by others. That's fine.
And I would just, if I could follow up to say that I have the same reaction to a children's camp, except perhaps stronger. That You know, I think it really is incumbent upon a group of people bringing children together to keep them safe. And I find it very hard to imagine the circumstance that would prevent a camp from complying with this law and protecting its children.
Well, my not-for-profit exemption doesn't have to do with children's camps. It's got to do with fire departments, churches, food pantries, and others that put on one or two chicken barbecues a year, go to Sam's Club, and buy their supplies there. That's a concern for me is, you know, you've got these not-for-profit, if we want to move on to the not-for-profits, you've got not-for-profits who are working hard to raise money to help the community, and, you know, they have the potential of having the health department come in and find them, and or they're going to have to find a supplier for one or two, you know, chicken barbecues a year or one pancake breakfast a month. And I'll tell you right now, they're still using styrofoam clamshells, almost all of them, because they don't know that this all applies to them.
Go ahead. You guys have...
Although that probably is something that we should consider,
reaching out, and because there would be easy ways to get that information out.
So my question about that would be, can I ask, in the instances that you're referring to, do you know, if they don't know that the law applies to them and it's happening one time a year,
I really don't know if they know or not,
right.
but I'm offering that as a possible example of why they're still using them.
And maybe you're right, Mary, then that would involve an educational outreach. But in the instances, assuming that, because the burden is on them to know, I guess, but we need to do a better job at getting the information out. But in the instance that they don't know, that they do know, do you know of examples where they've applied for the hardship exemption based on the amount of money that they bring in a year? Because you're referring to, in some cases, I'm assuming, pretty small organizations.
Well, do you have the exact language of that? Because I don't know that.
I have it in front of me.
Because it's about gross.
Yeah. It's $300,000. It must be less than $300,000 a year
in revenue.
Does that include tithes and donations at a church? Does that? What revenue are we talking about? I mean, if it's a Catholic church, does that include, you know, the money that they get from the archdiocese? If it's a fire department, does that include tax dollars that they raise, or if it's a fire protection district, money that they receive from the town? Because or does that include bonding costs for, you know, facilities or equipment?
Right. No, because, I'm asking, I mean, if you know if any of them have applied for a hardship exemption.
I don't. I don't know how this would apply to a not-for-profit, because, you know, they don't do revenue the same way, or they don't do sales the same way as a. Mm-hmm. And is it only revenue associated with the food?
No, it's gross. It's gross income. But I'm curious if any of them have applied for the hardship. I know that there have been hardship exemptions granted
to businesses.
But I don't know. I have not looked at a file of who it went to, or if any have been denied.
Only a couple, right?
I think it's a small number. Yeah. But I think it's also a small number that applied. I don't think it's, you know, I don't think there were a ton that were turned down.
The two qualifications are the gross income under $300,000 on their annual income tax filing for the most recent tax year, and with respect to each specific and necessary polystyrene and disposable food service ware, that there is no feasible alternative that would cost the same or less than the polystyrene foam disposable food service ware.
So some of them may have fallen under it. Mm-hmm. Some of them may not have. And I think when we talk about plastic bags, straws now are coming down the line, I think everybody at the table is usually aware that you're going to have 0.001% small, a mom and pop restaurant somewhere that maybe is still handing out their plastic bags if we ever decide to include restaurants and take out food. And that's something that you can live with when you're talking about 99% compliance. And I think we probably are talking about high 90s compliance with this styrofoam, but some of those were good questions to maybe tweak the language or think about, and I think we can send things out with social media and a lot of these not-for-profit groups that are so passionate in the area about some of these things. I think we can contact them with why we've set that that law and maybe some of the places that don't know about it. And I think we can get the information out that we need to pretty quickly without spending a dime of taxpayer funds to let people know. And if they still choose to have a dinner or two a year and hand out those plates, I'll just tell you, I can live with it. I think people, peer pressure, you know, customer pressure will eventually get the last remaining as people get more and more onto where I'm at with having to do something about some of these materials.
Tracy.
Yeah, and also I think with the education component and reaching out to these organizations, something that we talked about before, and we should reach out to the health department, see if they've done it, but included in the education a component of letting people know where they can buy alternatives, because now there are places like Restaurant Depot. It's not in Ulster County, but it's, you know, it's a source to go in and right there to look at all kinds of alternatives, which may be give or take a few cents, but there's quite a lot of alternatives. A lot of restaurants end up shopping there. So, and then other sources like Beyond the Wholesale, because those kinds of a place like a Firehouse might not have a regular supplier like Cisco or T.O. Miller. No. Or, you know, I mean, they might not have the regular that a restaurant has. So to tell them where they can source alternatives, I think would be helpful too.
So from the New York State DOH site, there's 527 eateries, including schools and camps in Ulster County.
Yeah, I don't think that captures
eateries
all.
Eateries is not going to include fire departments.
No,
it's
no,
not
no.
Include, yeah.
No, I'm just saying as far as
this not-for-profit extends well beyond the firehouses. Mm-hmm. It's a big net.
Brian?
Yeah, one thing we need to consider about when we talk about not-for-profits and charitable organizations is that many of them in Ulster County contract with companies that are probably located from outside the county that come into Ulster County and conduct their fundraisers here, whether it be a barbecue or something like that. So I'm pretty sure some of the products they use are still would be polystyrene. So if we're going to think about that, where does the burden lay? Does it lay on the charitable organization or volunteer firehouse that contracted with them, or does the burden of compliance lay with the company from outside the county that would come in here? So I think that's something gives me at least a minute pause to say, you know, if we're getting widespread commercial compliance, if a not-for-profit or a charitable organization or a volunteer firehouse contracts with someone innocently enough to have a fundraiser function at their facility, that, you know, why we're bringing now this, they could get looped in where they could be perceived as being violating this law. So I just, for me, that has me leaning a little bit towards, I guess I'm looking at the big picture here. If commercial compliance is really 99%, we're doing really well with commercial compliance, I could live with the not-for-profits or charities being exempt from this law.
Kathy?
I think the purpose of the law is to protect the people who are consuming the food in this in these containers. And a lot of the groups may be actually have their styrofoam given to them by commercial establishments that are now complying and are getting rid of their
old. I got that. But
well, for whatever reason, there have been no, as far as I know, this is not a priority for enforcement, and it shouldn't be, especially during the first year of this. But do we want people eating hot food and taking that home from the barbecues from the nonprofits out of this material? I really do not. And I think that the nonprofits have a higher, you know, ideal that they are serving the public, as you said. They are benefit corporations par excellence. And one benefit would be to prevent their food from having carcinogens in it. And baked beans are hot. chicken is hot, pork is hot. Yes, I was at one of these events just a weekend or two ago, and that was the material that was used. So what I think we have to do is figure out how we can educate the people who are doing that, either consciously or unconsciously, or coming from another county. That, you know, if you come into Ulster County, you cannot serve food in containers that will place carcinogens into the food. It just seems as simple as keeping bacteria out of the water at the public health level.
Okay, well, Brian, Ken, and then Manna.
Okay, at the risk of maybe being schooled a little bit, what's the rate of transfer of these carcinogens? If a person obtains a food in the food line and goes sits at a picnic table and consumes that food within 4 or 5 minutes, has the carcinogens in this material had time to transfer into the food? Or if someone takes it home and eats it within 20 minutes, as opposed to someone who would take it home and maybe store it in their refrigerator overnight and eat it two days later.
And then put it in their microwave.
Or put it in their microwave. But that's, again...
We can't stop them from doing that or tell them to do that. I don't microwave styrofoam. I don't think a lot of people microwave styrofoam.
I don't even microwave plastic, my thought is that's, again, obviously public health is paramount. But I don't know if there's data to support how quickly this transfer, is it like four minutes?
It depends upon whether it's liquid and the temperature and all that. But it gets into your food and your levels of carcinogens in your body go up. And if you're, you know, a smoker and you're doing that, then you have a bigger burden. It's not on its own, the only factor. But we do ask people to comply with a lot of much more burdensome regulations to keep food and water clean and safe than this one.
I just want to step back to when we weren't recycling and then we were, and there were a lot of people who were resistant, but ultimately many of those became the best advocates. I really think this and the other law, the plastic bag law, are a matter of changing awareness and habits. And I think one of the things we could do is utilize their interfaith councils. There's an organization of all the volunteer and paid, the Firemen's Association, et cetera, just to be sure they understand what the law is and that they phase out the use. So if they're given something for free, and they're going to use it so it doesn't in itself get wasted, but I can taste, coffee tends to mask it more, but a cup of tea in a styrofoam container, I absolutely can taste the chemicals that are leaching out. And so, I really try to avoid that and have for years. So I just think it's really a matter of education and behavior change, but I don't see any reason to have to change the law.
Tracy.
Yeah. I agree with Manna, but I also see the need for outreach based on what you're saying and education. I'm concerned if this were to move forward as written. You're talking about volunteer fire associations, but it does capture a pretty broad swath when you say not-for-profits. It's not just these isolated. So I definitely will be reaching out to find out how many violations have been issued potentially to these organizations and how many complaints have been filed against them and how many warnings have been, to see if there really is a pervasive problem that we're aware of. And then also look, but then take it at face value that we have to do a better job at reaching out to these groups and also providing them, like I said, access to available alternatives, because it is a process. I think the health issues are paramount, but I do want to remind everyone that one of the main reasons we passed this initially was also the environmental issues, mm-hmm. Both in terms of the waste streams, the waterways, the issue in terms of weight versus bulk, which is something, you know, that we heard feedback from the RRA board in support of this ban, and also, you know, it's good to have these conversations and to revisit things as they go along, but to remind everybody that we've had really tremendous success with this. We've had really good compliance, and I think we should be proud of and grateful for the compliance that we've gotten and the fact that it's been a success that it is. You know, there have been a couple outliers, but they're really, as far as my understanding, much more isolated instead of a big pervasive problem. So, yeah, so that's what I'll reach out to the health department too to follow up and find out, you know, what problems they're aware of that exist in terms of violations.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any violations that were issued to any of these fire departments and churches and whatnot that hold these things. I mean, you know, I wouldn't be in favor of sort of the look the other way kind of attitude towards it when you're dealing with, you know, mm-hmm. people who only do a couple of these a year. You know, the Chagnon Valley Fire District does 2 barbecues a year. Walk Hill Fire District, there's the 2 I represent, does mm-hmm. 1 chicken barbecue yep. a year and then a pancake breakfast every month.
Are they using styrofoam still?
I may have seen some pictures online of the barbecue that they had.
Have you told them the health risks and the law?
I've not told them the health risks, no.
Well, that's one thing.
I believe that they're aware of
it. What about with the breakfast? Do they use styrofoam for the breakfast, too?
Yeah. Plates. Yeah. You know, I mean, for me, part of it is they're trying to raise money to serve the community, and this will raise their costs. And it will raise their costs more than it would for a diner or a restaurant, because you're dealing with economies of scale and you're buying in bulk. You know, these fire departments are not going to be buying in bulk. So the per unit cost is going to be quite a bit different for someone who does 2 barbecues a year than it's going to be for a diner that uses it every day. I also don't necessarily think that there's going to be a lot of complaints about it, mm-hmm. because this isn't a law that's complaint-based. It's a law that's inspection-based. So where we're
it
catching
these... It is complaint-based, too, though.
I don't know how many...
How many people are going to complain about a fire.
Right.
A house, mm-hmm. barbecue.
That's...
Right.
You know, I know you talked about it catching a broad spectrum of organizations. That's because I didn't want to just cherry pick and say only fire departments and only churches, because then you get accused of cherry picking.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
yeah.
You know, it could be a political party, a local political committee.
Well, this suggests a possible way to rewrite the law.
That's the funny part. Yeah. That was the Aesopus Dems.
So the sponsor seems to be talking primarily about volunteer groups, not necessarily even groups that are organized as a 501c3. Some of the groups that might be doing these fundraisers are just associations, a community garden or something like that.
Most of them are going to be 501c3s in order to utilize tax benefits.
Yeah, but there might be a place where you capture a lot by talking about a volunteer fundraiser or the number of food events that are done in a year, less than 2 or 3. So those are suggestions. I would understand those suggestions more than the broad nonprofits. Mm-hmm. I would still not want to see the law go that way as a clinician, as a pediatrician, because I would want those groups to be leading on that, just like they're leading on other things in the community. And so I think that the educational route, at least initially, you know, if we go 2 or 3 years down the road and we see that those groups, you know, either need an exemption or need to be brought into compliance somehow, then I think this just still doesn't feel ripe to me that we really know whether people are going to have that much trouble complying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we've engaged probably longer than we needed to on this law. I don't see, me personally, I don't see this going anywhere, and I don't even think the large discussion we had was really about this in any real way going any further, maybe by a petition of discharge down the road, and then just for a statement of some reason. The only things of validity that I've heard brought up today is that we're at 99% compliance, and it'd be nice to get to 100%, and a couple of things we can do for free we've come up with to get it to that point. Really, I'm ready to move on, and I think there's a couple of things we found here that we could talk about making the law a little stronger, if anything. But as far as the thing that sits before us today, I'm ready to vote no or postpone or whatnot, but it's frustrating that we spent this long even talking about it.
Wow, okay. Well, then I guess we'll forget about the third part, which is the fines, which actually do need changing, but that's fine.
You know, I'm a public person, and I'm a retired public health nurse, and this is probably the first time I've addressed this group, but I have to say that this is a countywide law, right? Not a huge amount of people know about this law. I just found out about it, and it's been in existence for how long?
3 years.
Okay. So if I don't know about it, and I'm an environmental person that's concerned, and I think it's a great law, then how, you know, you see what I'm saying? I think that people need to be educated. I worked on the Clean Indoor Air Act for a long time, and it takes a long time to get the public to change attitudes. You do have to be patient. You have to get education out there. It's education, education, messaging, messaging, messaging. Everywhere this is the environmental group, if you have a newsletter or anything, the message has got to be out there. Mm-hmm. So you got to get your messages out there. Don't change what you're doing. You're doing something very, very good. Have patience. Give it a try. It takes time.
May I ask your name?
My name is Victoria Lucarini.
Lucarini,
and I did not sign in, and I will.
If you would.
Thank you.
So
Ken had one more.
Oh, sorry, Ken. Go ahead.
And another member of the public also.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I didn't know whether
you
were.
You can.
I
guess
we're in the public now. I just want to. I think it's wrong to assume that nonprofits are not engaged and concerned about the environment. And I'll speak on two realms there. My own church, the Waco Reformed Church, made this transition once we got rid of the styrofoam that we had. We did it because we believe in our theology, if nothing else, that we're responsible for the earth and keeping it healthy and preventing illness or anything else. And I now speak in New Paltz. There's also a group of churches which includes the Catholic Church, Jews, Quakers, Lutherans, the American Natives, and the Methodists and the Reformed, that meet on a regular basis, all because it's an interfaith environmental council. And they're devoted to doing everything within their churches to make whatever they're doing on their premises the most environmentally friendly that they possibly can. That includes composting, that includes going to using regular dishware and silverware rather than plastics and everything else. That includes changing whatever take-home packaging is needed. And they do it because we feel that we need to be responsible to our congregations and to the people in our communities. And so I don't want to leave you with the idea that, oh, because they're nonprofits, they don't care. And that's just not true at all. I think with proper education and knowledge, they not only care, but they feel fervently about a mission that they have. And we shouldn't just forget the overall goal of this legislation, which was for health reasons, for environmental reasons, for getting rid of something that had no value anyhow, and it's been successful. It's not. I just would advise not tinkering with it too much, and not necessarily making excuses for these other organizations too. I think if they understand the issues and they understand the problems that exist with styrofoam packaging, that they will come to understand that there's better ways.
And if you give them access also and options.
So do we have a motion to...
Ken had one more thing. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, the third, and if anything changes, you know, I had in this law reduced the fines. The most important thing to me is,
number four.
Yeah, section four, subsection B, number four, which is that fines are cumulative, and each day that a violation occurs shall constitute a separate violation. Our own administrative hearing officer determined that the only way that the health department can fine this way is if the health department inspector goes back every single day and finds a violation. And I don't think the health department's going to send an environmental sanitarian back to the same place every single day for 50 days or however many they have fined a couple of these places.
Yeah, I mean, I know that that's the... I've heard the same thing, that basically... that the belief was that in order to have, you know, firm standing, that you'd have to witness it for each day of the fine versus assume that they were using it in the interim, which is fine. But I think even without the language, it's almost as if the assumption is that the fine is cumulative in each day. So if our county's taking that position that they need the physical proof, if they went back 2 days later or every day, that would be still six separate fines. I mean, this is language that is modeled off our recycling laws and pretty standard laws. So I'm not sure what exists, and I'll check with legal if we remove it. Do you know what I mean? If we remove it and someone is continuing to violate,
but also I kind of feel like if we do have an instance of this happening,
yeah,
where there's a blatant disregard to it,
yeah,
there should be
some
mechanism to make it more painful for
but
them.
But they do, they can. If I could, you know, subsection 4 pretty much says that if the health department inspector goes to Joe's Crab Shack,
mm-hmm,
and finds that they're using styrofoam and then goes back 2 weeks later,
mm-hmm,
and they're still using styrofoam, then they can fine them the $250 for the first day, $500 for the second day, $1,000 for the third day, and $1,000 for every day in that 2 week period. And
but that's not the way we're doing it right now.
No, it was the way that we were doing it, and we fined somebody something around $200,000. And that fine was reduced to however many times
the inspector actually
went back to the facility that was using the styrofoam, because it was the opinion of the administrative hearing officer that they had to witness the violation every single day in order to approve a per-day fine.
But what I'm saying is that even in the circumstance that you're describing fines that are cumulative, and each day that a violation occurs, it's added on. That's what you're describing, even the way it currently is.
You're just talking about what counts as evidence,
but it's still cumulative fines and separate violations.
And if we take out number four, it'll still be a cumulative fine, but the health department wouldn't be able to. And again, if we would just want to ignore the fact that that's in there and the health department will just fine how they want to, then that's fine. But I feel like to clean it up.
Want a camp or a small mom and pop shop that's doing this, do we really want to find them every single day? I mean, are we going to go and try to collect that amount of money from somebody? I mean, anybody that's still doing this is a small shop or a not-for-profit in some way, correct? So we're talking about how many dollars a day? And we're trying, by removing four, am I mishearing that? It makes it easier for an accumulation of a fine?
It's the same.
What are we trying to get to?
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying that the fines are still, four says fines are cumulative, and each day that a violation occurs shall constitute a separate violation.
And what I'm trying to say is, what happens
even without, even with it removed, fines are cumulative, and each day is a separate violation. It just clarifies that each day is a separate violation versus someone saying, "Oh, that was just 1 week of use." So it just, even if they saw it seven times, it's seven violations.
It's a bigger stick. It implies that you can actually do more than we can do without a lot of investment in enforcement.
But I'm not really. I would like to. I'm going to talk to the health department and to legal about what the difference technically is with and without, because three says third and subsequent offenses. So. Mm-hmm. In the instance you're giving, if you had a week and someone went 7 days in a row and cited seven times, that would be seven violations.
Yeah, it's not going to happen, though.
But no.
I just don't have the manpower.
I know, but I'm just saying if they did, that would be the case without four.
Right, but with four in there, if they go in on day one and then go in on day 45,
seven.
The other 44 days can be counted as a violation.
But that's not the interpretation of our legal department or
that, yeah,
health
it is
department.
The
right
it is the interpretation of our legal department. It was not the interpretation of the administrative hearing officer that heard the appeal.
Oh,
it was the
I
opinion of because the camp that I'm talking about with the per day fine
mm-hmm.
was fined something like $200,000 for every day from the first time they went in there until the last time they went in there. And the administrative hearing officer who heard the appeal after they had been fined said, "You can't do that.
Okay.
I'm not going to approve per day fines unless you went back every single day."
I would just like to suggest that the amount of revenue might actually make it worth sending somebody every day. But it seems to me that fines are cumulative if you go every day, and that each violation that occurs shall be considered a separate violation if you're not going every day to show that it's cumulative. So in a sense, I think they're both kind of built into this, that you can't really assume that if someone's using styrofoam this week and next week that they used it every single day in between. I think that's a fair concern. But I think that's covered in fines are cumulative if you see it on an ongoing basis, and then, if you're going to just spot check, then those seem to me to be separate violations.
Mary?
Tracy.
Yeah, the other thing that, now I'm recalling as well, I believe, and I'll have to look back at my notes, but I believe that the other thing that four was clarifying was that each day was a violation rather than each occurrence, versus if a restaurant gave out 50 meals using 50 of those cups, that's not 50 violations, that it's one violation for the day of the occurrence.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's why we are also putting that clarification, because 1 through 3, as I recall, mm-hmm. set the stage for subsequent violations, but the fourth was saying it's per day versus, you served 700 meals for $10, and that's 700 violations, which without four, you could argue that each sale is a violation. So I'll look back at my notes.
Maybe we can think of a better way to write that doesn't leave it open to the interpretation. Again, because
okay.
the interpretation is everything, and we write this law and hope that the health department interprets it the same way that we interpret it, which I think, is one of the reasons that I was thinking about the unique packaging exemption differently than you were, and differently than Joe does, and differently than Dr. Smith did. So maybe there's a better way we can write that. Maybe we should.
And I'll look back at my notes too.
I'd be in favor of postponing the whole thing a month, and then we can bring in folks from the health department and the county attorney's office. Maybe our attorney can weigh in, and we can try to figure out maybe a better way to write that it doesn't make it so. a official at the health department can think that they can charge 45 different violations if they come on 2 days.
Right.
Okay, do we have a motion for postponement?
I'll make a motion.
Brian, second?
I'll second postponing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all in favor?
I'll reach out in the interim.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, motion carries. And I know you have to get going, Ken, so we're just going to go out of order again really quick and go to new business for Recycling Oversight Committee.
I am in receipt of the letter that I received from Legislator Waltman and the other City of Kingston legislators asking for the reappointment of the Recycling Oversight Committee. I came to tell you that it's actually a committee that's appointed by the legislature. I know historically, you know, the chairman has offered appointments and it's confirmed by the legislature. But as the chairman of the legislature for the last 2.5 years, I've been trying to put more power into the committees to help with these boards and have interviews and really make them the best that they can possibly be. So I think that as a committee, the environmental committee, if you want to put out a request for people who are interested, the makeup is there's 3 members at large. There's a non-voting ex officio member who's from the Resource Recovery Agency, a representative of the Town Supervisors Association, a representative of the City of Kingston or the Mayor's Association, which right now I think is the City of Kingston, a commercial institutional sector or multifamily dwelling, a member of the Environmental Management Council, a representative of the commercial waste hauling industry, municipal waste coordinators, and community environmental. We're going to have to just assume that this means the environmental committee because mm-hmm. it was the name of the committee when this was for when it was last appointed.
And a member of this committee.
Yeah, and it hasn't been reappointed since 2010. The other thing in the resolution is it can be no more than 11 members. So.
Where was the 11? Oh, the non. That includes the ex officio?
Yeah.
Okay.
If I can just let the committee know that the representative from the RRA is Tri Landy. We're aware of this committee, and every year at our annual meeting in January, we appoint one of our board members just as a representative, just in case the recycling committee meets. So the past 4 or 5 years, I think it's been Tri Landy, so he is the agency's representative.
When Manna and I served, wasn't the recycling coordinator the representative? I remember sitting. Didn't we sit with Michelle?
I think
she was.
I thought in the law it said it has to be a board member.
I don't.
But
think
she would go though.
I feel like she was our member when you were on the committee. Yeah,
there needs to be a municipal recycling coordinator.
No, that's
that?
Not.
There needs to be a municipal.
No, I know that, but I'm saying the agency's rep when we were last seated was Michelle, I'm pretty sure.
And it's not listed here.
Yeah, but I have to say it was just so you can think about it. No disrespect to Charlie, but it was super helpful to have someone who was actually in that role in the agency sitting at that committee.
Right.
I mean, I'm just speaking for myself. I don't know if you recall Michelle.
I almost think municipal recycling coordinator would make sense for that position. Really?
No, because we had a municipal recycling coordinator. We had Renee Cohout, mm-hmm. And we had Michelle on board, and Steve Noble was the City of Kingston's rep. That's the last seated.
I attended one of these meetings. I became director in 2010, so that was probably the one that I mm-hmm. attended. And there was a board member there, and Michelle was there. And I was there.
Okay.
All three of us were there. And I thought, and I want to bet $10 on it, not a lot. But
yeah, I don't know. It's a while ago.
I thought it said in the law that it had to be one of the board members. And maybe I'm remembering this law
wrong. Did it say? Ken, do you have the law?
I sent it to you.
Oh, it is. Okay. Yeah, so maybe.
Maybe I'm remembering it wrong.
But either way, if we could, if
I mean, Merlin would be
Merlin could be there. That would be great.
No, it's in the enable legislation for the Resource Recovery Agency.
It says membership. And it says municipal recycling coordinator.
That's a different person. That's not
somebody
what we're talking
operates
about.
A town transfer
commercial
station.
Waste hauling industry, Ulster County Environmental Management Council, Community and Environmental Affairs Committee of the Ulster County Legislature. Yeah, I believe it's the same as what the chairman read. commercial or institutional sector, multifamily dwelling interests. So there are 8 named and then additional 3 at-large community members with interest and concern, which may include students but shall not include members that fall into previously mentioned categories.
All right, so here, Recycling Oversight Committee consisting of one member of the agency designated by the agency board to serve as a non-voting ex officio member and not more than 11 voting members to be appointed by the county legislature.
He doesn't have to be a board member. Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's in Section A, Subsection 1, Creation and Purpose. That's where it's written about the ex officio member on the board.
Yeah, I feel like I would have remembered Charlie's participation all those years. You know, I just remember.
Well, he wasn't on the board at that time.
I
only remember Michelle.
And the purpose is there as well, if we want to include that in any kind of materials we send out asking for people who want to volunteer. Man. But it's my goal to have the committee handle that and figure out, who you'd like to have on the board.
That was exactly my suggestion. If we agree, and I'm really delighted to hear that you're considering doing this, there is a way to solicit applications. Mm-hmm. I think the reason that it's coming up now, originally the Recycling Oversight Committee, the purpose is all-inclusive, but it focused on new materials that there hadn't been markets for, but now there are. Mm-hmm. So, or it could be the other way around, in terms of saying there is no economic market for a given material. But I think right now the main concern is that haulers and the city are stuck in the conundrum of single stream, and this is a very well-balanced group to be able to wrestle with that because, the agency has a business to run. The city has, cost concerns. Haulers have their concerns in terms of, and I think there are solutions. So I'm really delighted because it does fall within this purview, and I think it's a really well-balanced group of people. It was designed to be so that all the stakeholders could, discuss a material or a group of materials and come up with sound recommendations.
Ken?
Thanks. Just to talk about, the single stream conundrum, as you put it, I like that word. We considered several times with the agency, along with the agency in discussions going to single stream, and I think we always resisted it because not enough time had passed to see if the single stream experiment was going to work out as well as our dual stream, and it would have cost so much money to upgrade to single stream. Certain agencies like the City of Kingston and haulers, took the leap, and it seems to have been a bad bet at this point. I mean, it does raise the participation rate in recycling, but it puts out a product that's really not recycled in a lot of respects. You don't get as good a product, and the market's dried up because of the fact that you don't get a good product, not nearly as good of a product as our agency puts out with the dual stream. So I just want, when we're talking about this and thinking about it, let that not be lost on us that we've almost gone down this road a couple of times with upgrading the MRF, and I would hate to see the agency end up in a situation where we're forcing them or trying to get them to accept single stream at our facility at less than it's costing us to dispose of it. Because for a while it was $20 a ton, and now it's up to $70 a ton, and it goes up and down. So I feel like, if anything, the thing to do would be to just, whoever is going to bring us single stream, we just dispose of it. The agency, I should say, charges that whoever's bringing it what it's going to cost to dispose it.
Do we need to
take? Yeah, it started in July, but there was a big
brouhaha. I feel like we should do the same thing.
You may want to form a subcommittee or somebody to discuss it.
But Tracy, can I suggest? I mean, it's definitely our responsibility as a committee to do this, and we've brought it up multiple times over the last few years and just haven't taken action, but I agree that the time is now. So can I suggest that we ask Fawn to draft a letter that goes out to the Supervisors Association, to the City of Kingston, to the EMC, even though the chair is here, to each recycling coordinator to ask if they're interested, and to each hauler that we're aware of. We can get the license, the list from the RRA. As far as the multifamily, that was the hardest one to seat last time, the multifamily dwelling. Maybe we can think about where we'll do the outreach with that. We have, you know, REPCO and certain agencies
housing
that we
authority.
Know of, the Housing Authority, so we can reach out through those. And for the commercial or institutional sector, the last time the representative was from SUNY New Paltz. I think we should reach out to SUNY New Paltz, to SUNY Ulster, and think through other large-scale generators. I also think we should circulate a general letter saying that we're seating this committee with the membership makeup to all legislators in case legislators have a recommendation, so that we're pulling from the broadest group. It was a great committee to sit on. It was a really diverse group of people who met at the table and were very engaged. And it's been a long time, but it's a very different time now. I mean, we were working in the minutiae of, like Mana said, of adding paper because it wasn't specifically listed. Right now, this group is going to start to face some real serious concerns and questions, and those questions are sitting waiting for them to be seated. So I think we need to be aggressive and immediate about circulating these letters saying that we're interested in looking to seat as soon as possible.
And we probably should put a date on when we would like.
Yeah,
and also
we
can utilize Acela. The
yes, definitely.
Appointment management software, mm-hmm. especially for the positions like the three at-large positions.
Yep.
Because it'd be nice with an at-large position, it'd be really nice to get everyday people who
right.
are interested in recycling on a board like that, instead of the, you know, sometimes we don't get anybody and then it'll be another legislator or,
mm-hmm.
you know, another town supervisor
yep.
or another recycling coordinator.
No, you're right.
When we could actually get a diversity of
input.
Of
and what would be nice, I mean, I recall, and it might even be in there, we talk about students. We had a very young member. I want to say she was 15 years old or 14 years. I mean, she came
mm-hmm.
with her grandmother, which was really nice. So if we could reach maybe out to the schools, not for the institutional sector, but just to say, you know, do you have a very engaged young person? You know, one of the high schools might have someone that really...
The Mount Academy won the Envirothon again.
Right. Oh, wow. That's great.
They actually won the National Envirothon this time.
That's amazing,
yeah. So
maybe
the Mount Academy would be a good place to reach out
yeah.
for...
So it was really nice to have someone so young and engaged.
Just real quick, the list of our haulers is on our website,
mm-hmm.
on, so if you need that. It also has the addresses and so forth, and
oh,
there's
great.
20 or 21 haulers in the county. And also, too, while Merlin's, I guess, not officially, I don't know where I come up with that board member thing,
mm-hmm.
but he is officially the board, I guess, was appointed mm-hmm. him. But if you want Merlin there, I'll just give her a directive to come to these. Even though she's not officially appointed, she can still provide input.
Yeah.
So if you want her there, I have no problem asking her to go. So.
I think it would be great to have her once it's seated, just because she's going to offer, you know, an insight from the day-to-day of dealing with it.
Sure.
With that, I do believe so.
Nothing hot.
Thank you, Ken.
Nothing goes in or out of it. I wouldn't use styrofoam.
So, Tracy, should we have a date of when we want a response by? Because we really ideally would want to start.
Yeah, I mean, I would say as soon
meeting.
As possible. Yeah,
right.
So three, if we did 3 weeks, would that be enough time to get the word out? And
let's see how quickly Fawn
can
get
it. When
do
we meet again?
Let's say
September.
You know, and even if we don't get a full seating
we can start to appoint members. We don't have to wait and appoint all 11 or all 9. We can start as they're coming in, let's get them going. And just that'll even get the discussion moving. Because some of the appointments are going to be very straightforward. I mean, the city's going to give us a name, and we usually accept that. Supervisors Association is going to give us a name. Exactly.
One thing I would like to say, the membership looks very good. The Town Supervisors Association brings in the rest of the county beyond the city of Kingston. But I'd like to see in those three at-large members some diversity from across. When I looked at it, I couldn't understand why City of Kingston had a rep, but not City, not New Paltz, or Ellenville. And there may have been reasons for it. There may still be reasons for it.
I can tell you one. Municipal hall trash. We have municipal pickup.
Mm-hmm. Did you at the time, for how many years have you had it for?
Forever,
yeah.
Well, so 5 years I was living in Kingston.
And I think that's great, because that is a very straightforward explanation. But I think it's important to still to have representative from other big cities in the county and the rural areas as well, if we can, if the volunteer pool allows that.
Yeah, and we can start to, as we're piecing them together beyond those, we can start to think, in terms of the municipal recycling coordinator might be someone. We want to not make the municipal recycling coordinator from the same community as the EMC member.
Right.
We want to create diversity by that placement as well.
Geographic and socioeconomic and...
Yes.
The more diverse we can make it.
Yeah.
So maybe we want to put the deadline the Friday before our meeting. Our meeting's on the 6th, so if we did it August 31st.
Remember, that's a holiday weekend, but...
I feel like I think it's really soon.
Too soon.
What I worry is if you put a deadline, it can cut both ways. You put a deadline, it might make people more inclined to respond quickly, but it also might make them think, oh, I missed the deadline, so I'm not going to respond.
That's true.
And it's August.
It's August, yeah. I think I would just get it out as soon as possible and say that.
Maybe say as soon as possible and not have a date.
They're going to discuss to start to pick the committee at your meeting on the 6th. So, and they'll continue the process until they're fully seated or something.
Yeah, that's great.
And
yeah, something that expresses the urgency. But
I would say that we should set a deadline at our next meeting.
Yes.
That way we're addressing
some
questions.
We don't let it get too long.
And you can set up a meeting date. Also, according to the administrative code, which came out of the law, this committee's supposed to meet at least quarterly. So.
We got to get a quorum before.
I remember working on that and trying to get it to be representative.
Yeah.
Luckily, there's not a pretty fine on that one.
Okay, so we will get back on track with resolution number 265, requesting that the New York State Assembly and New York State Senate introduce legislation amending New York Public Authorities Law, Article 8, Title 13G, Section 2050T, to include recycling material.
Okay, so I...
Somebody move it?
Oh, I'll move for discussion.
Second. Okay, thank you.
So I could not make the supervisors' meeting. There was some confusion in terms of the... It doesn't matter. But the invitation said Monday, but it was really Tuesday, and I had a meeting. So I spoke with Mr. Quigley, and I plan to still meet with the Supervisors Association. I don't want to move this. I told them I don't plan on taking any action.
Do you want to postpone it?
Yeah, so, I mean, we can postpone it,
or
I can...
take no action. Only postpone a number of times.
Yeah, we could take action. I mean, I could pull it and put it back in. I'm not in a rush with it. I really want to sit down with the supervisors and talk to them about it. And also with this other... With this committee being seated, there may be a more timely... So it may... How about we take no action, and then if it appears like it's going to be longer than a couple months, I'll pull it and resubmit. But right now, we'll take no action. Okay. And then depending on what happens next month.
And I didn't hear who was the second on the
Okay. So that brings us to resolution number 323, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 20 of 2018, a local law requiring restaurants and fast food service establishments provide plastic beverage straws solely upon request to be held on Thursday, September 20th, 2018 at 7:10 p.m. Do you have someone to move it?
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
Okay. Discussion?
This is Dave. I'm assuming Dave's not coming.
No.
Okay.
It's not an outright ban. You had issues with children, or if somebody had a disability of some sort that required a straw, you're putting them in a tough spot. Not allowed. You get rid of, depending on what I've read, a high percentage of straws being used just by requiring someone to ask for it. A lot of the same issues you're going to see with a small percentage of people with the plastic bag and the styrofoam law is you're going to have a great deal of compliance with the majority, all the large places, the chains and things like that on day one are for the most part going to be in full compliance, and you're going to have smaller shops that may continue. I think more and more you can rely upon free advertisement through social media, through education, through social media, and a lot of these not-for-profit groups, which are very motivated these days to get the word out on this. And I think this is something that could run largely the same way we're going to see plastic bags go and what we've seen from the styrofoam ban. I think we'd be one of the first counties in New York State to act on this, and I think it's coming. I bet you within a year you see three or four counties, and within two or three years you see half the counties in New York do something very similar to what we're doing. And if we are able to pass this, they're going to be quoting Ulster County. And you get rid of a lot of stuff that's being buried, hurting wildlife, getting into water supplies in places you don't want it.
Brian?
Honestly, I don't see this as a, I see this as a non-starter for me. First of all, let's talk about the ask or I didn't ask for a straw. How is that enforceable? How does someone go into a place and say, you asked for a straw, or I didn't ask for a straw? Or how do you prove that that person asked for a straw? And I just...
Has this gone before a lawyer? Can we have them do this way?
Yeah, it's being done that way. I'd say more than half of what you see in other states, and there's been a lot of other cities and counties in other states.
California's having a lot of trouble with it right now.
That has started to do this.
This is a non-starter for me.
Okay.
It's just by the mere fact that someone pulls up to a drive-through at a takeout chain, is that in and of itself asking for a straw? There are also ADA issues, which were brought up. Flex straws are needed. Does someone need to, ask for that? And hospitals, patients have to ask for a plastic straw in the hospital?
I think
the issue what we have with a lot of this is not so much the item itself, it's the responsible disposal of it. And one thing I know is there's a lot of litter, going on right now. And I notice it every day. I try to pick up a couple items every day. And if I think our time and energy would be better spent on campaigns advising people, give a hoot, don't pollute, all that. Remember, we had all those slogans. And I think at some point, individual responsibility has to come into play. And I think just drilling down to a straw, what about the plastic lid that goes on top of a paper cup? I mean, what's the really material difference between that and the straw? I don't see it. And I just, I don't think we should be an outlier. I think if the state wants to do something like this, I would leave this up to the state. And
Okay.
And how do you enforce it? Whether someone asked for a straw or not?
Two things. One, you mentioned give a hoop, don't pollute. This is free. And we're going to do away with a lot more plastic straws through legislation that may have some loopholes that I can live with. And it doesn't cost any money. The idea that we're going to go and actually spend taxpayer money to put, Reagan went through that with drugs, and there's better ways to spend taxpayer money, and you can get rid of a lot more plastic, plastic that you don't need to necessarily use without spending any money. I'll remind everybody of a great Joe Biden saying that I like, and that's don't compare me to the almighty, compare me to the alternative. And now he's talking about people he's running against. But I think this can apply to some of the other options that Brian threw out, or the option of doing nothing. And I'll tell you what, it's a total starter for me. And where Brian does not like it, I fully do, and I fully believe we're going to get rid of a lot of plastic without spending a dime. We're going to get high compliance. We're not going to offend kids or disabled. And I think it's a real winner and something that may need some tweaking, but I'm not sure where yet, because it still looks pretty good to me and I've heard nothing yet. But I wouldn't be surprised if we do hear something that we want to tweak. But I like where this is going.
There's something I am concerned about tweaking, but
sure.
Brian?
Where's the data? We say we're going to take a lot of straws out. How many straws are we taking out of the circulation? Do we know?
You want an exact number?
Well, an estimate.
Okay, I can give you...
An estimate.
As far as an Ulster County estimate, you give me a couple of hours, and I could probably come up with one just by doing math off of what
and
I
what,
see
and
from...
What
I have there's numbers
for
there's state
does
and...
Pulling up to a drive-thru at a restaurant, is that in and of itself that action? Is that constituting asking for
I think
straws?
That's a stretch what you're
know,
doing here, Brian.
Because I don't know how long... How else does a person take away a drink from a fast food restaurant if they don't have a straw?
I think if they hand a straw through the window and you don't ask for it, I think that would be... Applying to the law.
Tracy.
Actually, the way it's written, I'll circle back, but actually the way I read the way it's written is that the establishment asks the diner, do you want a straw? There's a sign up that says straws available upon request, but the burden's on the establishment. So it's not, as you pull up, you have to say, I'd like a straw. If you're going to hand out a straw, before you hand it, you say, do you want a straw? I mean, I expected, because I heard that this was coming, and I expected to see a ban, which I think would have required a lot of analysis and a lot of debate and a lot of looking at, and would have involved the exemptions and thinking through those that are disabled or sick with their their mouths wired shut coming home from a hospital. We'd have to think through all that. Because it's not a ban, for me, it really is a starter, and in a really literal sense, because what I think this does is it starts the conversation, and two, it starts people thinking about their own consumption. Because very often I'm at a restaurant, and this happens, I've noticed over the course of my lifetime, it's much, much more. I mean, maybe when I was a kid, people would automatically put a straw in, and having a little one, you know, they're more inclined to put a straw in the little one. But these days, I go out, and, you know, you ask for a glass of water, and boom, there's a straw in it. I didn't ask for a straw, and I can drink without a straw. I'm okay. But if they ask me, do you want a straw, I'd say probably 99% of the time I'd be inclined to say no. So, and for somebody else who maybe is less mindful, being asked would require them to think, do I really need this straw? And why are they even asking me if I need a straw? Is there an issue with straw? And I know that having been the sponsor and co-sponsor of the polystyrene law and sponsor and then co-sponsor of the plastic bag law, people come up to me all the time and say, what about straws?
What about straws?
No, straws. Plastic it's the next
lids.
Thing. What about straws? So
there's
a
first of many.
There's a growing awareness.
I can't. This is too far. It's a straw man. So I
you're gonna work every straw.
No, and the whole part of, to me, about the whole asking. What constitutes asking? What's the legal definition of asking? How does someone is it asking be in action? I think it's pretty obvious if you pull up in a car and you're handed a drink with a lid on it. There's some things that are obvious, are patently obvious. It all rolls around to personal responsibility by the consumer of properly disposing of the item. That at some point, at the end of the day, we can drill down pretty far as what we're going to ban. We're going to ban plastic caps on pens, because at the end of the day, it's how the consumer responsibly disposes of it. And we talk about all the time about creating awareness. We've had that discussion earlier this evening. And at some point, it all comes down to personal responsibility and volume talk about. Yeah, there may be problems. We all seen the examples online, but no one is advocating for anything like that, but at a certain point, it comes down to taking personal responsibility for proper disposal, and that needs to be more emphasized in my view.
Amanda?
Yeah, I the idea that the dine-in customer is asked if they want, and I think that, and I just want to say that even 6 months ago, I was embarrassed to tell, you know, I felt like I was being, I was going to upset the apple cart for if I went to a fast food place, if I said either no straw or no bag. And I want to point out that I very rarely go, but when I do, almost everything's in paper now. But I will say, when I order, I want a veggie burger with cheese, and I don't need a bag, because I'm only getting one thing. And they're very friendly about it now. I think there is a real shift in consciousness.
Only that's going to change whether we have a
but
straw.
I like the idea that the question can be answered either by the customer saying, I don't want a straw, or assuming that if they don't ask. But I also like the idea that the food service, whether it's dine-in or takeout, will check. And the last thing I wanted to say is flexible straws are not automatically given out unless somebody needs it, and they have to ask. We generally would have to ask. So I don't think that really, you know, maybe we can tweak the language, but I think it's worth pursuing. This is the first time most of us are looking at it. I don't think we need to rush into it, but I do think, you know, one of the 7 or 8 climate actions, and I was reluctant to add this because it seemed almost inconsequential until somebody did the math. And that is
big numbers.
The last one is reducing or eliminating single-use plastic. Already Mountain Brow House took that on. They got a certificate of appreciation. They're setting a model. So, you know, I think the time is right. I don't know that we've had a chance to really analyze exactly the language. But, you know, there is a lot of unnecessary use and waste. But I really sense that people's consciousness is shifting so that, you know, I don't feel so, like, as I said, I'm upsetting the apple cart by saying I don't need that and I don't want to make extra waste.
Well, I think it also gives some education to the restaurants, because how many times do they just throw the straws on the table?
Every day.
They're not going to take them back. They can't take them back and serve them to somebody else.
I know.
Once they throw them down on the table, they become automatically become garbage.
There's
so
paper on that, too.
It comes down also to be training, and this is automatically going to kind of train employees. Brian?
People's consciousness is changing, and that's a very good thing. And no one here, I think, is advocating for waste. But I think at some point, it has to come. It can't always come from the government, setting these rules and drilling down so deeply into everyone's lives, even to the extent of whether you can use a straw or not, or you have to ask for a straw. I think at some point it's good, Manna, that a lot of companies are taking their own initiative of changing their practices, and I applaud that, and I would encourage that. But I don't know that that's necessarily something that, on this level, that the government has to look to impose. I don't think so.
Well, one of the things that I was looking at that I think maybe deserves discussion is that about the signs.
What page are you on, Mary?
I'm on page 3. Mm-hmm. I'm on page 3. B, signs shall be protected from tampering, damage, removal, and concealment. Like, we're not. So what does that mean exactly?
Well, that's a type of tamper.
Section A says that there shall be a sign that single-use beverage straw available upon request.
Which that's fine, but I don't know about
what about
protecting.
What does that like? There's no like. Are they supposed to laminate them? Are we providing them some kind of?
That's up to you. There's a lot of signs you have to in a lot of stores. You have to have
whether if you're selling tobacco, you have to have that sign that talks about pregnancy. And it's similar language
for the tampering
even
and
for
the
what
other.
I have to have my liquor license up at all times in a visible spot. And there has to be some
tampering
language. You can't say, oh, you have to have a sign, and somebody pulls it out of their back pocket. It says, yeah, I got it right here. So you have to do some. You have to put some kind of
some
language
kind of
in
language
there that is basically stipulating. It has to be.
That's
you
in
know
the easily visible part.
Yeah.
That's an A.
And what is Mary asking about?
Mary's asking
B.
About B.
I'm asking about B.
Which says it must be protected. I think that's a typo
damage,
from tampering.
Or concealment. Yeah, they're basically speaking to it the same way the Liquor Authority does or the ATF, where when they have a sign you have to have in a certain kind of establishment. It's got to be viewable. It's got to be readable. It can't be damaged. I would assume that's all B is signs shall be protected from.
How about
damage?
Reasonably protect? Someone goes behind your car and rips down your sign.
I mean, so I think it's just a typo there.
Yeah,
oh, you're talking
right
about
B. I mean, it's kind of
B. Signs shall be protected from tampering, damage, removal, or concealment.
I know, does the liquor authority say that have language like that?
Yes. Yeah. I don't know what exactly it is.
We should look that one up.
It has to be up in a visible place.
Be tampering rather than tapering.
Yeah. That's what tampering. You were asking about, the word tapering?
No. She's asking about how
you found that by accident.
It's definitely tampering. Yeah, that needs an M.
I mean, I think A. I don't really have a problem with B, but I think A covers it. It's just that it has to be easily visible.
It just seems like that makes it more
fully
contained. That's legalistic. That's definitely something.
Yeah. But we could ask
Vaughan,
legal and look at liquor. We could look at
maybe
the liquor authority language, maybe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's got to be pretty easily accessible.
We can try to get it.
They definitely say it has to be readily visible.
Because
yeah,
in some ways, the way this is written, it's like, what does that mean?
Well, it means it could be behind glass, or it could be laminated, or somehow have some clear coating over it, and that it, I mean, it's basically that it's got to stay up. The first one says easily visible, and this one says lasting, is the way I read it.
See, this says every restaurant, fast food service establishment shall post a sign. So you could say, I did post a sign, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
This is ensuring that the sign stays up. I would get that's
but
my
but there may
guess
be better language for that that we could pull from someplace.
Dave wants to.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dave.
I don't mean to interrupt, but I was just going to say another place that you might look for language is there's not any of us that haven't gone into a public restroom and it says there you got to wash if you're an employee you got to wash your hands.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
It's
yeah
there. It's in every single one, and that's the same kind of idea. It's
right,
the,
right.
There must be language on that too.
Yeah,
right.
That's a great idea.
Kathy?
Stepping back again a little bit, I like the intent of this law very much, and I think I no longer take a plastic straw, even if I'm at a fast food restaurant with taking a beverage. I wait until I stop, and then I take the lid off and I drink. And I don't like the lid, so I carry a container so that I don't have to have that plastic. What I worry about a little bit with this, though, is we have the styrofoam law, which we've enacted 2 years ago. We're enacting a plastic bag ban, and there's been a lot of support for the plastic bag ban, but it hasn't been universal. And I do worry that this law might be felt as straws. What are they going after next?
I kind of felt it might be a little bit of a distraction, the timing.
Right, the timing.
Yeah.
And so my question would be, should we, you know, with the plastic bag ban, should we give some space for this, or is there a way to do it? And because what I like about bringing it forward is that, you know, that's one way to alert the public, is you get the, you know, even if there's controversy, you get the attention of the public. I wonder if we can pass a resolution that asks restaurants to do this, but does not require them to do it. Like, can we use our legislative authority to say that we would, you know, something going after, you know, along the lines of the green business, that, you know, we want to make a month, no plastic straw month, and ask citizens not to use them, or ask businesses to offer them rather than to assume. It just seems like something between doing nothing and something that putting another government regulation on it. You know, I'm taken by the fact that this does go pretty deep into our behaviors,
Joe,
which could be good.
I think we have a wave that I want to ride. to be honest with you. And there's just, I own a store, and I'm in a pretty, where my store is, I'm in a fairly left-leaning district, to be honest. But where my store is probably slightly right-leaning. A lot of my, I'm pretty split with my customers. And when I tell you, I've only had one person come into my store and talk negatively about plastic bags, and he was from Marlboro. He's on the conservative committee. But when I tell you, I tell people, I've been open and honest with people. As I've switched to paper, and even as I'm handing, you know, people refuse bags constantly, and I'm always telling people it's only single serve containers, minis and pints that you technically have to have it in a bag. You can take a full bottle of wine out legally. And I try to inform people of that. When I tell you, and I'm trying to talk to people on both sides of the aisle, and I know some of my customers that are registered Republicans and how they feel about a lot of things, and I can't tell you how ready people are for the plastic bag ban.
Come out to my district, son, and we'll just walk around.
And if
I've been surprised, too, about some of the people that have been really encouraging for it.
Bombarding people with a progressive environmental agenda out of our legislature, I don't think the way to go about it would be something that would be a plastic straw thing that's a suggestion in any way. If you're worried about that, then you just don't want to – I think you'd hold back. But I just don't feel that way at all. I think people are ready. I think we have 12 votes, and we don't know who's coming in next year. There's two or three districts where there could somebody – all it takes is one person to come in that doesn't want – how long did it take you to get plastic bags, Tracy? How long did it take you guys to get styrofoam? Now we have the votes. This stuff makes sense. This one in particular is a requirement to ask, and we're going to cut down on so much. I think the time is right, and we have a public hearing in a month if we pass it today, that we're going to find out where people are at. Then it comes back to us, and that's when we can have that next level of discussion and tweak, or pull it back for a while, or postpone, or take it off the shelf for a year if that's what we decide to do. Let's let the public speak. So that's all we're voting on tonight. It's
Mary,
a public hearing.
Two responses.
Number one response. If we're going to present a law for public hearing, I think it needs to be ready for prime time. I asked earlier about statistical data, and I went back through it, and this jumped off the page at me the first time I read this resolution. It's in Section 1, Legislative Intent and Findings, the beginning of the second paragraph. It says, according to this, over 500 million plastic straws are used each day in the United States. The United States, I believe, has a population of 321 million. So this is assuming that every day, almost each person in the United States consumes 200 plastic straws. I think if they're going to put a figure like that in there, 500 million, I think it needs to be cited somewhere in reference.
I can't tell you.
Okay.
It's an interesting story. There is a.
And you are.
My name is Margot Becker. I'm the vice chair.
A young child started that conversation, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. A child started that conversation. And just in calculations, so it's. We think that that.
Okay. So again, there's no. This is the data wasn't compiled by an official government agency. It was compiled by someone doing calculations. So this is not analysis of what's actually consumed. It's
seemingly it is lower than that, but maybe about at most it's half of that. It could be more than that. So there are large number of plastic straws.
The National Park Service that came up with that number. It looks like.
Okay, well that should be referenced in here, and it should be verifiable that we can check.
Brian, if you're saying we can't go to public hearing because it doesn't say National Park Service, that's a bit of a stretch.
It seems to me to be an absurd number, 500 million.
What if it's true? Are you on board with the legislation?
No.
Okay.
All right, for the reasons stated, but 500 million, considering we have 320 million people in the United States.
You know how many straws I've received today? I went to the diner twice. I went to Wendy's.
And I have one meal today. But anyway, that's just, I'd like to hear from the sponsor. I think the sponsor should come to the committee and explain and meet with us and go through it. And because I have some questions I'd like to ask the sponsor directly. And since he's not here.
I've been working with Dave on this. You could ask me.
But your name's not on here. So I would like to ask him. So I would be willing to offer a postponement.
What?
I'll make a motion to postpone.
Thanks. And I
saw that. I saw
motion
that.
To postpone.
Are we, Mayor?
I'm so sorry.
Can
go ahead.
I don't know. I'm not the chairman. A citizen.
Will they make a comment?
Sure. Make a comment. So many
sure.
people have.
This is a,
yeah,
a private thing. I have the League of Women Voters, but that. I just wanted to say as a comment that I heard this morning when people were talking about this being a signal, and particularly from your point of view, saying that people should start doing this on their own, that people have their own responsibility. There are two restaurants that I know of in Uptown Kingston. One is selling disposable straws that you, I think they're metal straws that you can reuse, and they're there on the counter. They don't give out straws, but if you want a straw, you can buy one for $2 or something. The other one is using reusable straws, and this is just based on the rumor that this is coming up. So it is very much, you know, a signal, like we're making a lot of signals to the public, and it's all about education. But the fact is that people are, and particularly in these small institutions, we're not talking about Kentucky Fried Chicken, but these are small businesses that are willing to make the changes that we're talking about the government asking them to do.
And one, it's funny you brought metal straws today, because that was brought up to me today by a nurse. You have to be very careful with the consumption of hot liquids through a metal straw, because it transfers the heat.
Probably.
And so you need. So that's something that I would.
Any I feel like any liquid. Hot liquid through a straw, you ought to be pretty.
Yeah, but
the
metals particularly.
I don't drink hot liquids.
It will burn you out.
So, so you're losing energy in a regular straw from
here to here.
But in the metal, it's like a thermos. So it doesn't lose that. Okay.
But we also should be go to the next section about the penalties.
What's
see
that,
what
Mayor?
We think about what penalties. What does everybody think about that?
Excessive.
And who gets it's the businesses again?
So Brian made a motion to postpone, but there was no second.
So let's finish discussion.
It does seem like it might be a little high.
The levels that the chairman proposed to revise the styrofoam, these are the same as the styrofoam ban, I believe. And the levels that he proposed to change the styrofoam ban might be.
I kind of feel like since we're not actually banning, that maybe it should be like
absolutely.
A little less
let's,
severe.
Let's make them quite a bit lower.
You know, I saw Joe. Well, I just looked.
Almost no. I would be okay with. I mean, a token, $25.
Yes, take the zeros off. Yep. Take a zero off each of them.
I saw that in one of the when I was just looking at a few minutes ago. I'm trying to find it. A similar California law that's proposed. They started their fines at 25. They went up to 1,000, but it was pretty long time until you got to 1,000.
I'd be okay talking to Dave right after the meeting and going 25, 50, 100 if you guys would like to change it to that.
I think we should do. I think it's a little high.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
Now, yeah.
Let's do it. Let's divide by 10.
And also, I think if they're too high, it will distract from what we're trying to accomplish. They're
going to fixate
on the fines and not on the big picture.
So we're amending these?
Yep.
So
we can, but then he has
to
approve
to it.
Yeah,
and if
he
doesn't,
it.
Then it doesn't.
Then
it doesn't
come back to you.
It just goes
didn't
up
agree
as
to
it.
Yeah, but let's go ahead and go. You want
so
me
you're
to put
proposing
that amendment
an amendment.
Yeah. Let's go to 25, 50,
so someone
100.
Has to move it?
Yeah.
So
Joe's proposing.
And second?
I'll second.
Okay.
And by the way, people are starting to carry their own straws as well.
And that's all good.
Yeah.
That's
I just got all my own straws.
Saves
without
the
a
businesses
law.
Money
yeah.
and actually creates a bit of a new industry in a way that hopefully keeps on going in other ways.
On the fines, can I ask another question? What? Just something I've just... Oh,
do we have to vote?
We have to vote.
Amendments.
So I'll vote the lower fines, yes.
Well, that is the fines, so...
Yeah, so all in favor?
Yes, I'll vote to lower fines every time.
Thank you for getting
it. Who's unanimous?
I'm not on board. I want to see where, I want the source of that $500 million a day.
So
I want to see that. I want that part of the resolution.
There were several.
That's a little
BBC,
dubious.
It was
yeah.
EcoCycle. And it was
National Park
National
Service
Park
is
Service.
Where I'm getting it from.
So the one other question for Joe and Dave, and again, I'm just seeing this online, is so to be clear, the establishment or the restaurant is the one who receives the fine, not the worker.
Not the person.
Not the
consumers.
No, I don't mean the person.
Consumer.
I mean if I'm a
not
server
the worker themselves.
In the
no,
restaurant,
it would be the
and I have failed
yeah.
to ask.
In the same way that, yeah.
It's not. I'm not going to get the fine. My restaurant's going to get the fine.
Yeah. Is that how we had 18 to raise the age of tobacco set up?
Yeah,
same way.
Pay
yeah.
back the boss day.
did we put in something in the tobacco legislation protecting the worker from being basically docked
right.
for the fine? Something
yes,
like
I
that.
Think we did.
I don't know if we need to do that, but I'm just. Raising. I think
I'd be
we did
surprised
like that.
If we're out giving a lot of these fines. To be
yeah,
honest with you.
I do too. But I'm just
well,
saying everything's coming to my head.
So do we want
word
to?
Else's
so
word,
we'll take a vote on public have. Hearing.
Yes, I'm ready for the vote.
On the resolution as amended.
Well, I
as
we,
amended.
I thought I made a motion to postpone.
Oh. No one second.
Oh, do there,
there
is a second.
Right, there's no second. Okay, that's fine. So we can vote on this without data.
What's the data you want to get? You want to talk to Dave?
I want to see the citation and the backup research that supports that 500 million plastic straws are used each day in the United States. We want to consider we have a population of the United States of 320 million.
I think it includes little straws there.
Yeah, mixing straws.
Well, let's see the data. Share with the group. Let's see the data. Let's see what protocols were used for this research. Let's see the data.
All right.
If you're going to put it in there, I mean, someone went to the trouble putting that number in there.
Brian, I already made a note. I'm gonna put a couple of the places that have quoted those numbers. But the thing is, whether it's 392 million or 500 million or 410 million or 620 million. Well, I don't think the National Park Service or a couple of the institutions that Laura mentioned are kind of pulling things out of thin air. First of all, you're going to talk to a lot of, they're probably going to look at a lot of franchises and how much straws they're buying per year. That's going to give them a starting point. They're going to talk to,
share your research with the group. That's all I want. I want to see.
Okay,
see
it will
that.
Definitely.
I'll
have several
different calls.
I'll even have different quotes. I'll talk to Dave about having different quotes in their straw numbers. So we'll have a range. We'll have a range, a reasonable range, from the most acceptable low amount to the most acceptable high amount as far as backup research. I think that's totally fair, because I think you could have a situation where. When you start trying to push environmental legislation or any other kind of legislation, if you're going to quote numbers, I do think it's dangerous to not have some kind of backup. So I'd be happy to put something a little more reliable looking
in there
yeah.
when it comes to the numbers. But I think that's the way to
yeah.
do it. I'm going to ask Dave if we could
but
do a range,
be
low end,
change,
high end, with backup.
No, so
with
yeah.
some pretty
a large yeah. number of unnecessary plastic straws are used
yeah.
in excess of. But
whatever,
almost 200 per person does.
So that can be changed.
I have 500 million straws, 300 million citizens. That's 1.5 straw
per day. That's what they're saying.
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, not 200 per day, as you suggested.
Yeah, it's just 1.5 per day.
It's 1.5 straws per day.
Yeah, I just put it in so that I would get those numbers correct.
Well, watch the line around Dunkin' Donuts and diners every time you drive.
See the data. If
yeah.
it is, it is.
But
that
was
it.
No, that would
and
be true if it were 5 million. This is 500 million is the number.
Right, but it's still
5 yeah, that's
1.5 million is 1.5.
Yeah.
500 million.
To 300 million.
No, it's 362
yeah.
million.
Still 1.5.
But we can raise it. That's not something different. So we could change it after.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that
right.
we're not,
so
not
okay.
going to be able to limit sippy
so,
cups. So,
all right, so we can.
That's part of it.
But we can call the question because that can be, that's not a substantive change.
What's that?
So we can move forward.
Exactly.
I feel
comfortable that nothing that we're going to be changing, and if it does, then it'll be another public hearing. But I feel pretty comfortable that anything that we brought up in this meeting tonight, which is a lot of different things, I don't think any of those are to the point
that it would make
that,
it. Yeah.
Yeah, you know where I'm going. Enough.
Okay, so I'll call the question. All in favor? Aye.
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 For the public hearing?
For the public hearing.
Aye.
Yeah, and change that typo too.
Brian's no. For a second, are you guys?
I said aye.
You're going to change the typo too? Can someone?
Yeah,
yes.
I made
she
a mark.
She did
change
on
the typo.
Yeah,
and then copy that. Okay.
Yeah, we have. Yeah.
Okay. If it becomes a law, then we'll have to. Well, it's just straws. It's not all single-use plastic, so that's all right.
Silverware's next.
That's fine with me. Go as far as you want.
That's my problem. Is I think we maybe should do something more comprehensive than nickel and dime this. Mm-hmm. People will get
what with the straws.
But
I kind of feel like it's a step.
And it's one that you can control.
It's
so unique.
It's more like giving somebody an introduction and not.
I think
getting comfortable with it and thinking about it.
Because
there's a lot of things you just don't think about. There's things lately that I think about that I didn't think about before.
Yeah,
so.
But you won't find anybody who wants this change more than I do, but I come from a district where plastic bags, I felt like we could get there, you know, the alternatives and so forth. And I think if we had a comprehensive something that we were also going to do, but if... To bring this and not know what the next thing is going to be.
Well, I think that would be more true if it was a ban. Do you know what I mean? If it was a flat-out ban, I would still.
That's a distinction that makes a lot of sense to us.
Right.
It's not going to be readily available, you know. So I'm
be interesting to see here to public hearing.
The public hearing could be insightful. I wish there were a meaty, you know, a middle course here. Because there are people who don't like as much regulation into their personal lives as I think this represents.
But this does give them the control.
Yes.
This gives them the control to say yes or no.
Yes.
Where
if we can
most
get
laws
the conversation
do not give you that,
that
particular option. Mm-hmm.
So and maybe we should talk with some business owners, and I'm sure many of us will, to find out, you know, whether this will be onerous.
Should be saving them money.
And it gives them the opportunity to sell.
There are some issues with, and that there are some public health benefits that come from using straws in restaurants, which are that it is not as easy as we might think to clean glassware, and so especially for places that are not using plastic and are using glassware, they have an extra burden to make sure that those glasses are clean, and they can actually use some environmental resources to do that. Now, I hate straws, and I've watched more times than I want to the straw being pulled from the turtle's nose, and I've watched some other documentaries which give me so much pause on this. My question is, out in Shandaken once, we put in a comprehensive plan that did some beautiful things to protect the night sky and other things. All the people who voted for that were voted off the next election cycle because they said we weren't letting them put up Christmas tree lights and we were not letting lights be on the flag, neither of which was true. But was the perception that we were trying to change everything. And I've started to hear some of that about the plastic bag law where I live. And so that's why I'm trying to bring it to this committee that the big picture is we want everybody to want to do this. And my question is, does the law help people along that path? Does it provide the incentive just like you want it to do? Or does it start to feel tight and then people react against it?
Well, I'm prepared to lose votes for this, and I'm prepared to lose votes for every vote I make, and I stand by the votes I make, and I think that we're all supposed to do that.
Please, this is not about my getting elected. Yeah. This is about our planet getting protected. And if you're right, and this helps that goal be achieved, then I am with you. I'm just not as sure as you are that you're right out of the starting gate every time.
you know, you want to have people buy into things, too.
Sorry, I shouldn't direct anything to another
meeting. So do we have any other new business?
Did we amend the effective date for that?
We haven't. I'm still in discussion with the executive's office, but it will be amended on the floor.
On the floor.
Yeah, definitely. We can't do it here because it has to go through.
But
yeah, it definitely will be amended on the floor.
Do we have a range in mind?
Excuse me, we're going to do old business in a minute. I just want to give Tim a chance to
say
anything if he wants to say anything, because it's been a while.
Actually, just two things. I just want to update the committee on just two quick things. I just thought of them, actually. The financial feasibility study for the Green Ulster Sullivan Solid Waste Authority is being written now. I spoke with our with the individual that's writing the plan. He's out of Manhattan. He is getting data back from the other counties. He got data back from us. And he said he anticipates it being done in September. So what I'm thinking is he'll probably present it to the board of directors at our September meeting. And then the thought is then he will go out to the full legislatures of all three counties and do exactly like what Cornerstone did with their presentation and present to Ulster, present to Green, and present to Sullivan probably in October or November. That'll be up to the chairman of those three counties when they want to do it, but it should be done in September. Environmental Capital. They've been our financial advisors for. Mm-hmm.
Are they going to have more financial data on Ulster County? Because I thought that was lacking in the last study.
That's the reason for hiring the financial advisor.
Yeah, that was kind of bizarre to me. We had some for the other counties, but not for us in that as much.
His job is. But the last study was done by an engineering company. Mm-hmm. They're looking at feasibility. They're looking at structures, infrastructure, location of transfer station, trucking routes. That was their main goal.
But they were able to give some specifics to the other two counties, but not as many to ours.
I didn't know that.
Oh, cool.
Anyway, the financial analysis will be done sometime in September, and they'll be able to present that to the counties. The other thing I want to mention, because we do have some new legislators here, is that for historically, I normally come at September's meeting here, assuming okay with the Chairman Wara, to talk about the agency budget. The way it normally works, or the way it always works every year, is that at the August meeting, at the Board of Directors meeting, they approve the draft budget. The very next day, I come here early in the morning, and I hand deliver it to the County Exec's office, and I hand deliver it to the legislature. A copy goes to the Chairman of the legislature, a copy goes to the Chairman of the Environmental Committee, and a copy goes to the Exec's office. And then I usually come to September's meeting here, so if you have any questions. We wait for comments to come back, and honestly, in the 8 years that I've been director, we've never had any. Usually the questions are usually resolved at this committee, if there's any questions at all. And then what happens at the September meeting, our meeting, the agency meeting, the board of directors sets a public hearing for the middle of October, and letters go out to all the town supervisors with the budget, asking for their input. They're welcome to come to our public hearing. Again, and I can just speak historically, the only time we've ever had anybody come to our public hearing for that budget, and we had about 30 or 40 people, was the year we were thinking about getting rid of the roll-off service. So, but other than that was a unique situation. Mm-hmm. Other than that, we usually don't have anybody that comes. And then the agency approves the final budget at their October meeting. So, and if it's okay with Chairman Waro, I'll be here.
Yeah, we'll put that on the agenda. Amanda?
You're all pretty much caught up with the roll-offs now. You have a good, clean stock. You don't have the kind of concerns that we had. I remember you talking about this.
We purchased 82 new roll-off containers, and those were all for recycling. And then on top of that, we purchased another 10 or 20 for MSW, C&D. So actually, we're in really good shape. We got rid of all of our old containers. We actually purchased a new roll-off truck, and we have another one on order. So the roll-offs are in good shape.
Great.
And the town's been very good about it. There's a big issue with the town packing the boxes with the excavators and loaders and things.
pretty well.
You did it without a net service fee. I'm really impressed.
Well, there's a $16 surcharge on each pull.
Oh.
We incorporated fees into the use.
Yeah.
I don't know if you recall, but there was a lot of animosity against the agency from a lot of parties because we were increasing the garbage fees to subsidize the towns. Well, we looked at the towns just by themselves, and now they're self-supportive. So no one can say that they're subsidizing anybody. They're paying their own way, essentially. And we base that on a 10-year amortization with a 5-year contract with the towns. So the agency went out on a limb and said, we're going to assume the towns are going to sign on at least one more time so we can break even. We don't know that to be the case, but we decided to go that route.
Did you put in a capital improvement grant for the roll-off containers you use for recycling?
For recycling, 50%
reimbursement.
Yeah, the recycling ones we could. Yeah, absolutely. And that was included in the price structure for the towns.
Oh, okay.
We knew we were going to get that. The FSW ones we can't.
That's an easy one to get.
Thank you,
Kathy.
Sure.
Kathy, sorry.
One other new business for next month, but I'd like to put it on the agenda if you would, is the people in my district have been coming to me because they have heard, and there seems to be some basis for this, that NYSEG now may be planning to do smart meters as Central Hudson had done them in the past. Previously, they did not, and most of my district is NYSEG. There's a little bit of Central Hudson. So I'm looking for ways to approach that so that we end up in at least as good a situation as we did with Central Hudson. As I understand it, Central Hudson has an opt-out provision. I've heard complaints about that opt-out provision, and now with NYSEG coming in, maybe it's time to revisit it and see how what we did with Central Hudson is working and whether that or something better we could do in terms of NYSEG's planning.
Okay, thank you. And so we'll go back to, I'm sorry, Amanda, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to bring up one, just for awareness, one more thing that I think is relevant, and that is Tilson Lake is going to, the community surrounding Tilson Lake, which was created by a dam, really wants that dam to stay in place. The Palisades Interstate Park Commission is disinclined. They're thinking of taking it out because of the cost to stabilize it. It has been identified as a hazard. And, there's an interesting debate in the larger environmental community. The people that are looking at Tilson Lake and trying to preserve the lake contend that there is a balanced ecosystem there, and it includes a good fish population and so forth that has developed over the years. The dam is very high up, in terms of the headwaters versus the Hudson River, and really fish would never be able to migrate from the Hudson River through the Sturgeon Pool, which is a hydro plant. I mean, there are ways to make that happen, but it's unlikely that this is going to, that the removal would impact fish migration. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there are a lot of pros and cons, but for this community, it's a really serious issue, and I expect we may hear from them in public comment and just to be making people aware, but I wanted to give everyone a heads up that that is an environmental issue in Ulster County. I don't want to quote somebody else, but Riverkeeper's taken a pretty strong position that ultimately all dams should come out in the watershed. And, that's for them to say, but some of the other environmental organizations think that there may be some value in actually repairing an existing dam and an ecosystem and the value to the community of living on a lake, what your property value is and the recreational use and so forth. So I just wanted people to be aware.
I have two questions for you. The first was about what I mentioned before, and what I saw was from Cornerstone was they had savings estimates for Green and Sullivan County and none for Ulster, which concerned me. We do a lot more composting, we have a lot more recycling coming in, but it appeared to a lot of people like that was kind of left out because they were going to put in there that there'd be a that we'd be losing money where they would the other two counties would be gaining money off this deal, to put it in simple terms. And that's why I asked you about there wasn't a lot of savings estimates for Ulster. Why Cornerstone did include it for Green and Sullivan, if you want to respond to that. Then I got another question that has something to do with
sure. Well, that's true. I mean, because the counties, we're not a county department.
Yeah.
The other two are county departments. So we're a separate authority from the county. We don't ask for a nickel from the county. We're self-sufficient.
Yeah.
Whereas those two are county departments. So if they divest themselves of that responsibility and become an authority, just like we are in this county, then yes, there would be savings, absolutely, for those counties.
And it's only because it's a county department that they're saving money? It's not because they're not composting or recycling at the rate that you are?
That's also a factor as well, but that's the main reason.
But that's what alarms us about teaming with these two that are going to gain from our existence, and we will be hurting, certainly early on it looks like, monetarily, from teaming with them for certain.
Just if I can take a step back on how this all came about, that's short term. You're looking at short term. The whole reason for putting this conglomerate together is because, and I'm going to be really frank with you, I've been sounding the alarm for 2 years now, and I'll say it again. A year from now, when I go out to bid, I'm scared to death. I really am. I sit on a state board. I know what's going on in areas of the state with tipping fees and with trucking rates. There's a massive shortage of truckers in this country, all over the place, for truck drivers. Massive. I know what MBI is paying their drivers now, and they're having a hard time making money on what we're paying. When I go out to bid next year, I could easily see a double cost on my trucking rates. Easily. Now, I've been seeing this for a year and a half. How to solve this problem? Is to put three counties together, because we're all carrying small sticks. Now we're carrying a big stick. And our economy of scale is going to be much better. Even my peers say, you know, congratulate me from across the state, saying, this is great, you're trying to put this together, you're smart. You're really smart, because if you have that economy of scale, instead of 120,000 tons a year, you got 240, you're going to carry much more weight going to these facilities. They're going to have to give you a reduction, because they're going to want that volume.
It's kind of hard to do this. What does that get us? If we're in dire straits the way we're doing it now in a year,
right?
Doing it going from 100 to 240, does that get us out of trouble for what length of time? In your educated opinion, are we just kicking a can? Now we're safe for 10 years until we have another emergency conversation. Are we headed for that kind of a thing, honestly?
That's a twofold thing, okay? It's going to give you more buying power initially. But for long-term solutions, and you know, you could argue about all the different disposal options. Landfill, there's a company out of Canada that turns waste into ethanol. There's another company out of Italy that turns waste into fuel for cement kilns. But you got to remember, all that is volume-based. You know, when the agency first started talking about putting in a landfill at a couple years ago, I had a board member that was really sounding the horn on landfill. You know, I went to one of the conferences, I work around a lot of professionals. These guys have been doing this for 30, 40 years. And he says, do you guys look at doing a landfill? I saw something about that in the paper. And this guy's from another end of the state. He goes, what's your volume? I said, 120. He goes, you can't do a landfill at 120. Any engineer will tell you that. You don't have the economy. It doesn't work. The numbers don't work. You're going to have the highest tipping fees in the state or in the country.
That's my next question.
That's the economy of scale. And, for instance, this company out of Canada that contacted me when they heard about this Gus thing going on, they right away, the first question they asked, well, what's your volume going to be? I said, well, MSW, C&E together, probably 240. And they said, oh, never mind. They said, because we need at least 350 to make the economics work.
Yeah.
And that's it, at the end of conversation.
So and that's what leads me to it's troubling that we're trying to get to more solid waste. Mm-hmm. And right now, what do we charge for solid waste drop-off, and what does it cost us to get rid of it? Off the top of your head. I
mean, right now?
Yeah.
We charge $103 a ton.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. T&D right now is about $54. The remaining of that, 20% of that's debt service.
So we're charging $103. And it's only costing us $54 to get rid of it.
Which is an unbelievable number. When I tell that to my peers across the state, they don't understand how we got that number.
Really and that's going to go up to what?
I don't know. We'll find out a year from now.
So we're doubling our money on solid waste?
No, we have debt service. We have substantial debt service. 20%
of that, 20% of that 103 is debt service. If I had no debt, which, mind you, in 7 years I won't have any debt.
Yeah.
My last payment's in 2025.
Okay, thank you. Some of the legislators
it would go from 103 down to about 81.
How much is... So, in a way, if it's costing us money at this point, that means we're subsidizing solid waste drop-off. No?
No.
Mm-hmm. We're making it.
That's what I'm saying.
We're making it even.
We're breaking even right now is where
we're at? Breaking even. That's what we have to do. Actually, that's not entirely true. We've been making a little bit of extra money every year, which I've been putting in the bank, because I knew this was coming. And it's a way for us to...
Good
planning, because I'm not going to turn around and hit all the ratepayers, including the towns, with an astronomical increase if it does happen. All right, look, I'm an engineer by training, so I times everything by 1.5 or 2, right?
Sure.
You design a bridge, you don't design it to load, you know, if it can only withstand 10,000 pounds, you don't design it for 10,000 pounds, you design it for 15,000 pounds. So with that mindset, that's the way I look at finances as well. I'm going to make sure I put enough money away. This does hit, and I know it's going to hit. I just don't know how bad yet. I just heard a number yesterday of a company. We're paying about $28 a ton for trucking.
Yep.
I heard a number just yesterday from one of my peers from another part of the state saying, boy, that's all you're paying on trucking? I said, yeah, and he's about the same distance as we are. He goes, they're paying $58, and now they're being talking about them going to $68.
But do they subsidize the fuel like Ulster County does?
No.
So that's a big difference there, too.
Well, that's not going to be a huge difference, though.
What is our overall, that's not gonna be that big. If you go over to last...
It's the truck...
3 to 5 years.
Let him finish answering one question, though, before you start a new one?
Kathy, I think the chairwoman can handle that.
Also, and Manna is...
Yeah.
I just wanted to hear the
overall,
answer.
This is my last question. What is our overall solid waste numbers as a county over the last 3 to 5 years? Have we gone up, down, or are we leveled off? Where's the trend line?
We've gone up.
Yeah, and that's a problem to me.
Well, no, actually, depends what side of the aisle you're on, I guess, or depending on your political philosophy is. The amount of waste you generate is a direct indicator of the economy. I can tell you how what the economy is doing by just looking at the waste stream. Right? When the economy goes up, the waste stream goes up. People are buying more product.
Sure,
because we're throwing.
People are buying more products. Plus, they're putting off, if the economy's down, they want to remodel their basement, but they don't have the money to do it. But now the economy's up, they feel a little more secure about their job. They're going out and they're remodeling their basement. They're hiring a contractor to come in and spend $20,000 to remodel the basement.
But if we're using more renewable and we're recycling more, we should be. The point is, it's unsustainable. We can't keep producing garbage. The population going where it's at, we can't keep producing. There comes a time where there's no more holes to dig, and you can't burn forever. So my point is, we have to start coming up with solutions to level that number off, even through a good economy. Rather than see the number go down, maybe you'd see it level off.
That
means passing the cost along.
That may be true if it's only MSW, but you understand, I take in C&D as well.
Sure.
When I give you these numbers, it's MSW, municipal solid waste, which is what you're talking about. But I also, the larger my, a good 20-25% of my waste stream is C&D. So, for instance, I had an influx of waste the other day. Why did I have an influx of waste? Because in the city of Kingston, they demolished a house.
Yep.
A whole house. Okay, so I got an entire house that comes in. Or I have a house that's demolished in Woodstock, or I got a house that's demolished in New Paltz, whatever the case may be. So that, you can't just look at, when I tell you that there's 130,000 tons coming into the agency, probably 5-6 years ago, we hit 118. This year, we're on target to hit 130. Okay, now, a lot of that is C&D. So when you're talking about recycling, we're talking about people like talking about old toilets coming out of their basements and things like that. That's what a lot of the material is.
Yeah, I did construction for many years, and when it's easy enough to throw everything away, I'm not ripping out beams that I can refinish or reuse with just by pulling nails and pulling sheetrock off of it. I'm taking a big load, I'm throwing it in a truck, and I'm dropping it off. That's what I'm talking about, making it painful enough. And if anyone's been in any Ways and Means meetings or any other meetings, in this meeting once in a while, I challenge the budget and I challenge the way we spend, and I want to put money back on the tax rolls. But there are times where I think we need to pass that along. And I think in this entire country, certainly in this state, but I'm a county legislator, so I'll talk it on the county level too, and I believe it, that we're going to have to start having a conversation about passing along the cost of solid waste in order to deter solid waste.
If I can make a suggestion, you may want to talk to the supervisors about that. And the reason I say that, I'm telling you how to do your job. Please don't take it that way. But I've been in enough supervisor meetings that their outlook on that is the opposite.
Yeah.
Because they deal with the garbage on the roads and the couch being thrown in the back roads.
Yep.
And they're worried that if I increase the rates too much, now all of a sudden the guys... I had a person do it today at the agency. They went to... Instead of coming into our agency, they came down and threw an old lawnmower off just before my office.
Yep.
And unfortunately, I had my back turned because I only looked out the window just a few minutes earlier, and then there was an old lawnmower there.
Yeah.
So what the supervisors I know, because I hear it in the supervisor meetings, if the rates go up too high, I'm going to have the couches thrown in my on my back roads. I'm going to have the tires thrown in my back roads. Unless you make it economic enough to let people throw their trash away. So
the city receives the import of trash. People import trash into the city when that happens as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good. I never even thought of that.
The city has a big problem with importing.
We come up with
trash.
Reasons like this to keep burning. You know, in 20 or 30 years from now, they're going to be going, man, I wish those legislators had a little more foresight. They listened to the supervisors worried about the couch on the side of the road. I mean, that's something we'll have to deal with, raise fines if need be. But
if you want us to raise rates, please include that in your public comment.
I will. I've talked to Tracy about it at length.
Manna?
I just a couple things that are I think are really critical here, and one is that one of the principles of sustainability is local self-reliance, and when I knew about the potential landfill shortage, I didn't really understand about the trucking personnel shortage, but trucking is burning fossil fuel. You know, until we have solar-powered electric fleets, one of the very basic principles I learned early on at Cornell Waste Management was a picture of the landfill, the town, in between were trucks with little smokestacks showing those emissions. So I really, you know, I have mixed feelings about Gus, about Green Ulster and Sullivan, but unless I see a real emphasis on waste reduction, if C&D is that large a portion of the waste stream, then we ought to have a facility like Taylor here in Ulster County. And as a county and as a region, we need to start incentivizing recycling markets. But as long as you're sending it somewhere else, whatever it costs, people will pay because it's out of sight, out of mind. You have your own disposal facility, you know, landfill or otherwise, but any of the otherwises ultimately still need a landfill. Then it becomes an asset that you want to preserve, so you want to make less waste. And unless I hear those principles embodied in Gus, then I will not support it, because the arguments that are being made are exactly the opposite of what we need to be doing. We need to be reducing the amount of waste we're generating and solving our problems as much as we can locally and not exporting it to that somewhere else that's going to be filled and closed. You know, I want truck drivers to have... They have an important role, but that role can be a local role. It doesn't have to be Pennsylvania or Seneca Meadows.
Tracy?
I'm done.
I have to say that Manna said exactly what I was going to say, but even better. And I just want to add and emphasize the end of that, that when we talk about the immediate problem of the trucking, which I didn't know about either, so quickly on its heels is the landfill site problem, the Seneca Meadows and the closures. And I think the fact that we aren't aggressively, and when I say we, I mean both this legislature and the board need to be talking about self-reliance in very concrete terms about how we're going to own our own future. And, you know, when I hear things about economies of scale as they relate to landfill, I was just trying to look up because Delaware County, I mean, the numbers of what they're putting into their landfill a year can't be anywhere near the numbers you're talking about. I mean, they're doing the first diversion with the waste to compost and then only what's finally left. And it goes to Manna's point about when you have a landfill, you own the responsibility of it, and it's precious. You want to extend its life for as long as possible, and the way to do that is to keep things out. So you're invested. I'm preaching to the choir because I know you've been speaking about self-reliance too, but I think we've got to up that ante in that discussion. And what concerns me about Gus, to reiterate what Manna said, is that I keep hearing about economy of scales to do the same thing. And I'm with Manna. I am not going to be able to support, I'm saying it to you, but I'll say to the board, I'm not going to be able to support Gus if that's all I hear. I'm going to need something really concrete saying, this is what we're proposing, and what we're proposing includes this image of self-reliance with really clear plans, not just how we get together to get a cheaper trucking rate, because that's not going to fly for me in the long term. This is the now that we have to get on. Is the future's here. So, and we're going to be, and it's pretty soon. I mean, people are going to be really, really sorry if we don't start taking action, because that action takes some time to do. If we were to vote right now to site a landfill and whatever compost alternative facility and whatever waste to compost or waste to energy or whatever, it's years away. It's years away from happening. 10 years is the number we kept hearing. So
actually, 15. The last landfill that was cited was took 15 years.
So what are we doing?
And if Seneca Meadows closes in 2025,
it's going to close
in January.
Then soon.
This is scary. I mean, I want everybody to hear this. If that closes, there's not enough landfill capacity or waste energy plant capacity in the entire state to take that by.
Yeah.
That's a fact. That's why I'm raising the alarm bells. And the only thing I can do on my end is raise those alarm bells to you and to Greene County and to Sullivan County, and I can only raise those alarm bells, and then it's up to you guys. I mean, after this financial study's done, it's out
of
my hands.
But you
got
to raise them all. You got to talk about Seneca and Meadows as well, not just the trucking, because that's the bigger alarm to
and
me.
It's an immediate problem, and it's going to be a huge problem. You know, I said to someone the other day, I said, I retired in 10 years, and thank goodness, in 10 years I'm out. And I'm going to South Carolina with my wife, you know, because if nothing does come to fruition, in about 10 years, this thing's going to be a disaster. So the only thing I can do, and I've been doing it for the past couple of years now, is raise the alarm bells and raise the alarm bells and tell everybody, you know, you got to act on this somehow. And if you don't like the Gus idea, I'm fine with that. I'm not stuck on that. I think from an engineering standpoint and financial standpoint, I think it's a good way to go. But if you guys don't agree with that, that's fine. You guys are the ones that are going to be making those decisions. And the only thing I can do once this financial study is done and is presented to you and the other two counties, it's up to all you guys to act on it. And maybe one county drops out and the other two counties stay in. And they may have formal authority. I don't know. I don't know. But it's going to be up to the three bodies of the three legislatures to figure that out. And the only thing I can do is then just step back and say, okay, I did my part. At least I can go home to sleep.
Kathy?
You know.
I have three elements that I don't feel clear about. One is, we did form a committee and try to move towards a report on siting a landfill in Ulster County, and my understanding is that that wasn't sufficient on its own. So I've been feeling a little better, and this is the second question or thing I'm not clear about. I've been feeling a little better with Gus because I thought that at least Sullivan, I think it was, had a landfill that had some additional siting volume that it could capacity. And if that is the case, then if we expand our notion of what local is, then that seemed to me like it did offer the kind of benefit that Anna Jo and Tracy have been talking about. And the third thing is, if Delaware County has even more capacity, should we be talking about Doug's instead of Gus?
And, they're not interested. They're self-sufficient.
They want to stay on their own.
Yeah.
Okay. So is the second point valid, that we can think of this consortium as offering us a possibility of having some local capacity that we currently don't have? And maybe it wouldn't even address all of the 10 to 15 year scenario, but the short term and the medium term start to be at least addressed.
I can answer that if you like. Yes, Sullivan does have a cell that can be developed, and if you were to put Gus together, that would last in the 10 to 12 year range before that capacity is used up. On the political side of that, it's now within eye shot of the new casino.
So, doesn't have anybody there.
So, so politically, that's something you guys would have to.
There was
to,
a political problem
other,
for them before.
Would have to figure that out.
Well, does a landfill have to be unattractive? I mean, what we have in Ulster County is very close to residential areas, and it's virtually unnoticeable.
Some of my discussions with the legislators in Sullivan, because I've been visiting the counties and I'm starting to get to know the legislators in the other counties. I know all you guys pretty well. We've been doing this for a while. But politically down there, it might be difficult. I'm trying to be diplomatic.
Yeah.
It would be, while the capacity is there, and actually that was one of my hopes in the very beginning when I found that out. And I found out, you know, I started looking at the numbers and I started thinking, geez, you're probably in the 10 to 12 year range. That'll buy us some time to figure something out. Because I'm thinking the same thing locally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the more I delved into it, I started talking to legislators. They said, well, that's pretty close to that new casino. So.
And it's getting a little late, so I know Laura wanted to ask a question.
I just comments. I'm not opposed to Gus. I think it's a good idea to bring together, you know, multiple counties to work on, you know, a solution, whether it be a gasification or a landfill. But I keep hearing it's more for the buying power, and that makes me cringe. And I'm going to go back to taking a look at creating a zero-waste model. If, you know, we're looking at addressing certain components of the waste stream, banning organics would be a great one. Not only would that reduce the waste that's going out, but that would give the agency another tipping fee, another revenue stream, not just with the incoming waste, but also with the materials that you're going to be selling. So, you know, instead of looking at it as garbage that now has to get shipped out and, you know, you're paying the fuel costs on it, you would have another revenue stream. And I know you were running low on compost, but we were.
We ran out of compost.
Yeah. So I mean, it's there. Yeah. You know, that's there.
And that's capable.
What's your capacity? I mean, how far from capacity are you with the compost?
Tons, is it?
A permit capacity? Or
Yeah, I mean, in terms of how much more could you
50%
accept?
50%.
Yeah, how much did you accept this year compared to what you were
there's
allowed?
There's a times you're full and you have to turn away, right?
We've never had to turn away food waste. Oh. We've gotten close. Mm-hmm. We've reached that capacity, and then what happens is that all of a sudden, like for instance, organics, I don't know if you're familiar with organics, but that's a major food waste.
They're doing about 40% of the waste.
Yeah, they were giving us waste, and we were right at that capacity, then they pulled out, and they went someplace else. So then all of a sudden we had the excess.
Organics,
water.
Not a general term, you mean a company.
A company with an X on the end.
Oh, okay.
If you look them up, they haul, you know, they're massive trucks that come in with food waste. But they go around to collection routes, and they have a collection route. So they were bringing us food waste,
wow.
And they were then they pulled that one someplace else, and now they just came back.
Okay.
So so we're pretty much at capacity right now.
I'm sorry. Were you done?
No. I'm just saying that there's other components of that. There's also the reusable items. There's also discouraging people from the trend. You know, that now that there's money to do this consumer modification, I think there needs to be a lot more education. You know, and then along with that, I'm getting calls from haulers like, what's up with the single stream? What's going to happen? I haven't seen any components of education out there to assist, and I think that's going to be a big one. I mean, we're seeing with everything, regardless of what law we're putting out there, you know, there's a recognition just from what's getting put in the papers. So, and a lot of that's not even accurate. But, you know, to get the correct information out and to get this education out and involve, you know, the kids, I think that would make a big difference. So I don't think we have to look so much at how much we can pull together to get a better price on what's getting shipped out, but how much we can reduce it and divert it to create other revenue streams.
I do want to clarify, too. I do talk about the economy scale and the price. But I also want to go back to also something I said about the final solution. And I really believe I'm right on board with Tracy. And this has to be something we have to do here within this county or within the three counties and do something local. I really believe in that. I believe in that from a whole host of reasons. Okay, it's right in our backyard. I agree with Manna House. She talks about just being in your backyard. I agree with it from an operational standpoint as well. I'm not worrying about snowstorms in the thruway. And the thruway gets shut down, and mm-hmm. I got no place to ship mm-hmm. waste. Mm-hmm. So these are the realities that I have to deal with on a, I don't want to say a daily basis, but not a basis that I have to deal with. Mm-hmm. Make sure we have enough trucks and so forth. And one truck didn't make it back. It broke down, or trying to get another truck was someplace else. So while the price is what we're talking about, I do want to just emphasize, too, on this final disposal, you know, idea that, you know, we need to find a solution within the county and be able to make that work economically. You know, you don't want a situation either where it's $300 a ton and people are throwing couches on back roads. Mm-hmm. I live on a private road, and I don't want couches thrown on my road.
I've cleaned them out of streams.
Yeah.
Manna wanted to say something quick, and then Joe. Yeah.
Okay. I just want to say that in Connecticut, they have a law that says that if you're within 20 or 25 miles of a composting, food waste composting facility, and you're a generator of X amount a week, that you have to divert mm-hmm. that waste. I would love to have us look at that law, but I don't want to do it until I know we have the capacity. And what I'd like to start with, while Gus is going on and the recycling oversight and single stream versus dual stream, is as soon as possible to have a realistic plan. There's a facility in the north, there's a facility in the south, maybe we need one more facility on the 209 corridor, and have a real plan that's cooperatively developed by those businesses that are in the composting business right now, including haulers, so that portion of the waste stream can, because it's, if we know that there is a place to take it, mm-hmm. then the haulers will take it, mm-hmm. you know, that'll be a part of
their
portfolio of services yeah. that they offer. And but we have to get all those pieces in place, and, you know, maybe next year we can actually, because that's something that is a lot easier than a landfill, and it can be done ahead of time, whether we're going to do municipal solid waste composting or some other intermediate solution. I think we're on the verge of being ready for that, but I think we need to have that conversation. And so, I apologize because it is late.
I'll just sum up. I like to think about things like I'm in the future looking back at why did they make the decisions they made, how did they come to this, and I just worry, to put it really simply, that 50 years from now, somebody's going to be sitting up here and going, so they had a problem getting rid of trash, and the solution was more trash. So, and that is not the, I can't tell you how much I respect every, you have a hold on every aspect of anything that we ever talk about, and I think everybody, no matter who, where, and we all have different opinions where we want to go, but we all really appreciate you. So don't, you know, I can be challenging, but I don't want you to think that I don't really love having you in that position. The other thing I'll say is, when we talk about Gus, and I think I can speak for a couple of people in here, is it's going to be really tough for us to vote yes on this unless in there is a comprehensive, tangible plan to seriously reduce waste as we, and I mean, I think even with two other counties involved, we'd still be hitting a point of volume at which we could do what we want to do for the next couple of years. But if it's not a significant part of the plan, and I don't know what else I can come up, that anyone can come up with, and you're going to have to make it hurt. And that means financially. And that is going to be tough. It's going to be tough politically. But if we're sitting here having a real conversation about a real problem and we're going to change things 20 or 30 years from now, that we're going to do things that need to be done now, it's going to have to hurt.
That's all I could say, and I'm willing to live with that. If I'm only here another year and a half, but we do something real in this county that other people haven't done, and we really cut down on the amount of waste while solving the problem for the next 10 or 15 years, I feel real okay about that. But that's how I feel. And I don't see anything in Gus that gets us off the trend line we're on. Economy doing good or bad.
And Dave's been waiting, and then...
Just one quick thing.
Okay.
This is just informative, but the Environmental Council, along with the League of Women Voters, is going to have a further discussion on this, probably on October 27th, from 9 till 1 at CUNY Ulster. Six different speakers on various aspects of waste management, from zero waste to recycling and so forth. And so you can just sort of, we will let you know for sure on that date. I believe that that's what's going to happen. And we've already starting to line up speakers and stuff. So just want to let you know, we recognize that this is going to take a lot of discussion to figure out where we're going. Maybe
Thank
we can help.
You. Thank you, and Brian,
the
and then
nice
then
to
a
sponsor.
Motion to
to be real, to be clear though, sorry, to be clear, we're not talking about any of the individual counties producing more trash. We're talking about pooling the trash that's currently produced among the three counties. So it's not like we're exponentially increasing each county to increase their share. We're looking at pooling to make that pooled solid waste more economically viable to dispose of. Correct? So that's what
which will increase waste. Yeah. We'll stay on the same trend line we're on, is the point.
Well, that's... But then the other thing is, one thing about increasing rates, and as represented from the city of Kingston, we see it in the city because we have system, we have municipal trash disposal pickup. We see it, and we have predictable days when our trash is picked up in various sections of the city. We see a lot of times consumers, individuals, know this, the trash disposal schedule in the city and leave bags on the curb in various names. We get that a lot. And the city monitors it as best as it can. We do notice when the rate holders increase the outside from outside the outlying districts, increase their rates, we see an increase in people bringing their consumers from household trash and bringing it into the city and leaving it next to cans that are already out in the city, or maybe even put it. So that is noticeable. And we have inspectors that go in and look at addresses, and we try to monitor it that way, but that does become a problem.
And the city better start. Do we have, is there anything else, or do I have a motion to
talk about it? We're talking about
Oh, I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry, we didn't do
That's
your
okay.
climate
Just, I'm going to be very, very quick, but I do want to say that we've trained 45 people. We have about 15 to 20 on a steering committee, with 80 people at the launch last month, and we now have about a dozen businesses in the pipeline to take an action. And we've also identified a whole lot of businesses that we didn't realize have already taken action. So they're the green business leaders, the people that take the challenge. When they take an actual action, will become a green business leader. The website is up and getting populated. This morning we met with Chris Marks at SUNY Ulster to try to get some student volunteers or interns, and they're actually going to host a presentation for students and faculty, because anybody can take on that assistant, that volunteer assistance. And Ulster Savings is one of the businesses, and when we have this flyer, is going to be made into a very attractive brochure, a trifold brochure, and they're going to put them, you know, in the little stands around all of the banks. And I think, you know, some of the other Reese Insurance and Ryan Insurance and some of the other businesses will help us get the word out to other businesses. So this is something that has really taken off. The level of cooperation is outstanding, and I'm hoping a year from now that businesses will want to join that crowd of businesses that have a decal that says Ulster County Green Business Leader. So I'm very excited. And if there's any questions, talk to me after. If nobody has anything else, I would make
a
motion.
Maybe a good segue for us, because we're doing solar isosopus.
Yay.
So we have RFPs that came out. There's a 35-cent per kilowatt reduction in the price. This one is for businesses. It's going to be the Esopus Business Alliance, so everyone's welcome. And you don't need to live in Esopus. They're doing residents and they're doing commercial businesses, and they'll do... One of them actually is going down to Westchester because we had someone interested. But
would you make sure that any business that joins Solarize finds out about this so that they can register and become...
And become one of the businesses.
Yeah, that'll really help us to get to that goal.
I'm going to send this out to all the legislators tomorrow.
Okay. Do you want a better copy, maybe?
Scan this.
Scan it. Okay. Yes.
You want some more?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that's running through until October. So if you're interested in signing up, if you don't want to wait until that event, we can... I'm sorry, you probably want to...
I'm sorry. I know.
There's a website, so you can click on there.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yay.
Thank you. Maintaining our reputation.
But I do have an after the committee meeting.
Well, long as
it's big stuff. It's nice. So when you're in the committee...